Yeah, what's happening? Happy Monday, everybody. What is it? August 11th. August 11th. All right. How was everybody's weekend? Did you play some rock music? Did you do some drinking and drugging? like it's Monday at high school. Yo, dude, man, I was drinking and drugging. Anybody hit the Shroom Fest? I know my boy Ari Shaffir is out there in the desert right now, probably coming down from some serious Jim Morrison hallucinations. I sound like I'm on mushrooms. There's Shroom Fest, I guess, this weekend. I like shrooms. I've taken them many times. I'm not sure how many over the years, but they're fun, man. They're fun. You get older, you get all scared, like, oh, shit, I don't want to die. When you're young, you don't care. You just give me a handful. Let's go to the drive-in movies. Watch shit fucking come off the screen. I remember I took him one time to watch Cujo. Don't do that. Yeah, Shroom Fest. I don't even know why I opened up with that. I was just thinking, like, summertime right now. It's so rock and roll party weather. It's crazy here in L.A. Just warm, kick ass. Had a good weekend. Had some shows at the Improv that were fantastic. Okay, I'm going to be in San Francisco this week. Tuesday and Wednesday, Punchline. Come out. What are you doing? Get out there. Come see me. Punchline, Tuesday and Wednesday. Also, this weekend, I'm going to be at the La Jolla Comedy Store. Friday, Saturday, 15 and 16. And what else? Oh, yeah. Oh, the end of the month. Denver, coming your way with the Russell Peters. Comedy Works, 27, 28, 29, 30, 31, I believe. Man, that's a run. So come out. Comedy Works with Russell Peters. End of the month. And then September 5 and 6. Get your tickets. I'll be at the Comedy Spot in Scottsdale. Cougars! Scottsdale. So that's some of the shows coming up. Come check it out. Say hi. Del Razor action. Also, thanks to everybody that saw me on Marin last week. That was super cool. I forgot to mention it. But I was on the TV show Marin on IFC. Thank you, Mark Marin, for having me. That was fantastic fun. And his season wrapped. I hope he gets a third season. That's a great show. Love that show. You guys watch it. If you haven't seen it, check it out. Marin on IFC. You can watch all the episodes. Episode is brought to you by the mighty McGuire Harley Davidson. Speaking of Harley, man, I rode up to San Jose, and I'm about to ride to San Fran tomorrow. And thank God for some McGuire Harley Davidson. These guys helped me out. Keep my bike in order. Keep it serviced. These guys rock. Go see them. McGuire Harley Davidson in Pacheco, California, 93 First Avenue, North Pacheco, California. Check them out online, McGuire-HD.com. Talk to Ryan. Say, hey, Dean sent me. Don't forget, I'm going to be there for their grand opening September 20th. We're going to have a big party there. I'll be hosting it, doing some comedy. Hopefully, there'll be some Harleys there doing burnouts and wheelies. Like the Unknown Crew. Those guys are dope. Check them on YouTube. Unknown Associates, I think it's called. Crazy guys on Harley FXRs wheeling and burning out all over. These guys are outlaws. Let's see. Also, great episode today. This episode, I've been trying to get this guy on for about a year. Actually, interviewed him about a year ago with a few other guys. They were doing a secret project, and it was early on in my podcasting wisdom. And, it turned out shitty, so it didn't go up. The sound was terrible, which bummed me out because it was Dave Lombardo from Slayer, who's my guest today. It was also Gary Holt from Exodus. And it was Ross Robinson, the kick-ass friend and super record producer, and Casey Chaos from Amen. So that's a lost episode that'll never happen. Anyway, Dave, finally got him on. He stopped by over the weekend. We talked for hours about everything, his new band Film, which is fantastic. I saw him. Their record comes out September 16th. See them. Buy their record. We talk Slayer. We talk Phantomos. We talk drums, life, rock and roll, everything, man. This guy is awesome. I mean, imagine you playing Slayer. How insane is that? You start in the ground zero of Slayer, start a band in your neighborhood that becomes like the iconic metal band. You know, what do you got? The big four. You got Anthrax, Slayer, Metallica, Megadeth. You know, to me it goes Metallica, then Slayer, then Megadeth, Pete Sells, and then Anthrax Among the Living. That's the, but I mean, you know, if you're going to go big four, I'd put Exodus in there, Bonded by Blood era with Bailoff. Bonded by blood. Bailoff. No guy ever like Paul Bailoff ever. Slayer and Exodus did a tour early on, man. Like, I mean, their first tour, you'll hear about that, for Combat. They played the old Studio 54, the famous disco place in New York. I'm just babbling today. It's hot as fuck in my place. Sorry. I got AC, but it only works in the bedroom. So I'm in the living room doing this intro, just going, how fucking hot is in here? Let's just get to the episode. And that's what you fools are probably saying. Get to the episode. I hope to see you in San Fran this week. Tuesday, Wednesday, Punchline. La Jolla Comedy Store Friday, Saturday. Denver Comedy Works at the end of the month with the Russell Peters. And Scottsdale at the Comedy Spot, September 5 and 6. I love you guys. Please subscribe to the podcast. Tell friends. You guys have been kicking ass lately. I've been getting some great tweets. Hit me on Instagram, Dean Del Rey. And don't forget, subscribe. Leave reviews. You want to donate to the podcast, it's DeanDelRey@yahoo.com. Every nickel helps, believe it or not. And I love you guys. Light the candles of rock. Here we are, Mr. Dave Lombardo. Hey, here we are, another episode of Let There Be Talk. Incredible guest today, Dave Lombardo, drummer god to me.
Yeah,
like
really?
One of my top five favorite drummers.
Thanks, man.
Which is weird because I'm like a singer, guitar player, but there's dudes that just blow my mind, you know, and you being one of them, Bonzo, Josh Freese, drummers that are like, wow, what the fuck, you know? It's hard to do that, right?
Yeah, I mean, I've been doing it so long that, you know, you just, it's part of your life. It's part of your conditioning daily, you know, routine.
But I mean, it's hard to establish as a guy, you know, like there's a million drummers.
I never intended, you know, for that to happen. That's just something that, you know, the people, you know, the fans have, you know, labeled me, and I just go with it, you know. I enjoy it. I'm not, I don't know, it's kind of weird. It's surreal. I don't take it to heart because I look at other musicians and there's a lot of great drummers out there. So
yeah,
you know,
yeah, I know it's always weird to say,
yeah, it is. Yeah.
Like, hey really? Man, you're a god. Yeah, it's like, yeah, yeah. That'd be funny if you would just say like, yeah, pretty much.
Yeah.
Yeah, here's I read some stuff on you. You're from Cuba. I just had Rudy Sarzo on last week.
Oh, Rudy, yeah.
Yeah, and he's also from Cuba.
Yeah.
You lived there till you were two?
Until I was 2 years old, yeah. Actually, my parents and my brothers were part of this really historical, you know, kind of migration, you know. They sent my two brothers, as I think my brothers were 10 and 13 years old,
wow,
to the U.S.
On their own,
to live with a foster family, and my parents were supposed to meet them about 5-6 months later. You know, it was like some kind of program with the Catholic Church to get the kids out of, you know, out of Cuba, so they're not part of this whole communist regime. And so my parents, you know, signed them up and sent them away. But then I think within 3 months, the Cuban Missile Crisis took place. Wow. And the wall went up. So my parents couldn't see my brothers for like 5 years.
That's insane. Yeah.
So they were separated, which caused, you know, a lot of tension in the family. But then I showed up, which is the way my mom says the story. And yeah, I was kind of her last little egg. And, you know, and
that's crazy. They're
in Cuba and they send my brothers. Exactly.
Yeah.
And
living in with a family.
The wall comes up. And, you know, goes up, and next thing you know, the family's divided, you know, for like 5 years.
And then how'd you guys get out?
Well, eventually, you know, I guess, you know, slowly, you know, the embargoes and all that stuff, you know, was taken away, and they allowed the families to be reunited. But yeah, there's a lot of like 2020 documentary on this whole.
Wow.
Yeah.
That's migration. Insane.
Yeah, it was like a way to get people out of Cuba at that time.
Wow.
Yeah. So now, I've been here. I mean, I lived in Cuba for 2 years. I don't remember shit.
Yeah, of course. And you haven't gone back, right?
No, I haven't gone back.
Yeah, a buddy of mine went.
I would love to go one.
Yeah, he went when they filmed that documentary, the music one. What was that? The one on the famous music over there. God, I can't remember.
The one with that Ry Cooder?
I can't. No,
Buena Vista Social Club.
Yeah, that one.
Yeah, that's awesome.
Yeah,
that's
yeah. My buddy went over during that, but he said it was crazy. Like, you know, you see a Harley because, you know, time stood still when the wall went up. Mm-hmm. So the cars are from the 50s and the Harleys are over there from the 50s. They don't have tires. No. So they wrangle them from the ocean and just make them fit on their car. So you'll see a motorcycle with two different sizes.
See, that's where I learned my innovation on drumming. You see, you learn how to innovate.
Make shit happen. So you guys moved to Southgate, like in Los Angeles?
We flew into Florida, stayed there probably about a week. I mean, these are stories from my mom. And then my brothers were in Long Beach, California with a foster family.
Yeah.
And we flew over here, and this is where I've been since 67.
That's wild.
Yeah.
Now, when they come over, they have no money, right?
No. You see, that's one thing I really appreciate from what my parents did. It's like the government took away. My dad was an entrepreneur, and he had several markets, he had three of them in Havana. Well, the government, once they found out that he was part of this, you know, this program,
right?
You know, and he was going to leave, the government came in and took everything away from him. So, you know, that was a, you know, that really sucked. And, you know,
yeah. So you got nothing.
Yeah, nothing. You come to this country, and he got a job. He lived the American dream. He bought his house, you know, and retired, you know, with his gold watch from his, you know.
So, yeah, what did he do?
He was a butcher.
He worked
for Farmer John, yeah.
Wow, that's dope. I love Farmer John.
Yeah, right, when you walk
there. I'm so weird, the spicy sausage.
Yeah.
Oh. Yeah, Farmer John, I remember it was a box, and it was long, and it had like 10 links.
Dude, that's amazing.
I ate the shit out of this. Just had a dude drawn on there. He's like a farmer. Yeah. I ate those like crazy, that and Jimmy Dean sausage. Oh, that's how come I look so
those
good.
Those spicy links, man. Those things are amazing.
That shit was great,
my dad
right?
took me to the... to the slaughterhouse once, you know.
Oh,
I
man.
Got to see all the pigs, you know, they're all in line.
That shit's creepy,
it's
right?
It's insane, yeah.
I went to a slaughterhouse once, and it reminds me of Javier Bardem in No Country for Old Men.
Yeah.
When you watch that movie and people go, what's that weapon? I knew what that weapon was. That thing kills cows.
Yeah.
It drives a bolt through their brain immediately and pulls it out. Yeah, it's incredible. And there's another weird thing I never knew. All the cows had a magnet in their throat.
Oh.
So when they ate, because they just eat shit off the ground, it would go to the magnet, like, you know, barbed wire, coins, bottle caps, inside their throat. Oh. And then they'd pull the magnet out and reuse it on another cow.
That's
so
weird.
Yeah, slaughterhouse is weird, man.
Yeah.
You eat meat?
Well, also, yeah, hell yeah.
Yeah, right?
Fuck, yeah.
Can you imagine if you
didn't?
I was
raised on fucking meat.
Man. Yeah.
We were carnivores. Yeah, also the movie Carrie was filmed at that Farmer John plant. In
Is that right?
Yeah.
The pig's blood.
All the pig. Yeah, that's where they got the pig's blood.
God, that film's so great. John Travolta.
Yeah, yeah.
It's
it
funny.
Really hit home because when I saw that movie, I don't know how old I was, probably eighth, ninth grade. I was what, 15, 14 years old when I saw that movie. You know, really, it scared the shit out of me.
Yeah, me too.
And then the fact that they got the blood from where my dad was working.
Yeah, right?
Like, oh, no. But, yeah, it was
That's a funny thing. Like, you're 49, and we're, like, 1 year apart, but we grew up on, like, all the same stuff. And it's funny that you said that movie scared you because there's, like, The Exorcist.
Uh-huh. I was too young for The Exorcist, but I remember my brother coming home, and he was pale.
Yeah.
He was just like, oh, man, I saw this movie, and
I paid to see, like, Bad News Bears or something, and then me and my buddy Mark Garderman snuck in and saw The Exorcist, and that was a mistake.
Wow.
We had to walk home, and we used to take this shortcut through the creek, uh-huh. You know?
Yeah.
And we didn't go that way.
Where'd you grow up?
I grew up in the Bay Area.
Oh, okay.
Pretty much the Thrash headquarters, right. You know?
Exactly.
But what I'm saying is those scary movies are funny because when the first time I saw Slayer was at the Stone on the South of Heaven tour. And I remember Sheila Renee took me. You know her? She did like interviews back in the day for radio.
Sounds familiar.
She's like, hey, you want to go see this band Slayer? Right. And I remember she interviewed Tom that day, and he had like a tattoo of a Grim Reaper or something on him. What's his tattoo?
Yeah, he has some kind of skull.
Yeah, something scary. I remember I was young, man. Yeah. I was like, man, this guy's fucking... I mean, I really thought at the time, Slayer, and I saw Merciful Fate also. Uh-huh. That shit was scary, man. Yeah,
at the time, we were.
We were
very scary.
No fucking joke.
No one scared me more than Venom.
Venom.
Dude, when that black metal album came out, I was scared shit. I was like, damn.
I never got into Venom because I had the Combat Studio 54 DVD, yeah. And of course you guys destroyed and Exodus destroyed, and then Venom didn't want to use their footage, so they just used some funky footage.
Yeah, I remember that.
And so I just never got into them.
Yeah.
But, you know, I was reading, and it's funny because everybody I have in here, the band they start with is Kiss.
Me too.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Isn't it incredible? Cedric Bixler from the Mars Volta was here, uh-huh. And great guy. And he said he believes, and it's the greatest, Kiss is the gateway drug to rock.
I believe it. I believe it. They instilled that rock stardom that, you know, I craved, that I wanted as a kid. You know, I want to be a rock star. I want to be loved by the fans. And just some of those pictures, the posters that I had on the wall really, you know... it resonated fame.
Yeah.
There's one poster I remember having of Gene Simmons where he had his arms up.
Yeah, with the kid. Yeah. I love those with the wings.
Yeah, that was
I had all four of those. It was each guy. Ace leaning back with the smoking guitar.
Right.
Yeah, uh-huh. I think Peter was on a stool or something singing Beth.
Yes.
And
yes.
Then Paul was just Paul, whatever he was doing, purple, wearing purple.
Yeah, you're right. Those are the series of posters.
Yeah, I had all the Kiss posters. Brian Tichy, I was at his house recently, and he still has them, and they're framed in his house. The giant ones that were collages.
Yes.
Uh-huh. The classic of just the Live 2 stage. With them on it, with the elevators coming down.
Oh, the one that's on Kiss Alive 2?
Yeah. That's an actual poster.
Wow.
The thing I notice about Kiss the most is there was the people right after us who were into Boston, Eagles, Aerosmith, and Zeppelin. I don't think they have, and I could be just talking stupid shit, but I don't think they have the passion of the people that got into music from Kiss and then found that stuff later. You know what I mean? I think they had the top notch and there was nowhere to go.
Yeah.
Like us, we get Kiss and then you get into AC/DC or something. Mm-hmm. And then all of a sudden you're into Nugent and then it's Zeppelin.
Yeah.
You know?
That's basically... I went from... I mean, my brother used to play Zeppelin and Cream when he used to come home from work, and I used to listen to that music as a kid, and... You know, I used to bother him. He used to want him to just pass out because he was tired.
Yeah.
You know, and so he would set up little boxes and pencils and drums, and I used to play along to that. So I was listening to that really early on. But, you know, when I was a teenager, I really got into Kiss and got into Aerosmith. But I was always searching for the heavy any kind of music. You know, it was never, I never got into, several bands I didn't get into that you'd be surprised. Because there was a lot of people, right now I can't think of them, but there was a lot of bands that I didn't get into. And people ask me, it's like, you were never into that. It's like, no, they weren't heavy enough.
Right, right.
I was always searching for heavy
That's
music.
Interesting that you were into something heavy at that, even that age.
Yeah, well, I was searching for the tones and sounds that kind of, you know, resonated on the heavy. Like, for example, Communication Breakdown by Zeppelin.
Amazing.
I got into that. That was heavy. You know, the Wonton Song.
Yeah.
You know.
That Immigrant Song to me was like, what the fuck? I mean, it just comes on, you know?
Right?
It's so just
I was
power.
Always into those heavy ones. Then later on, I got into the more mellower stuff. But, yeah, heavy all the way.
What, we were just talking before we started the interview. Your first concert was Nugent.
Yes.
Mine also.
Yeah. Nugent opening up for the Scorpions.
That's what opening for the Scorpions.
Scorpions, yeah.
The Scorpions were the headliner?
Yep.
That's crazy. Yeah. I can't even fathom that.
The Sports Arena in Los Angeles.
Oh, yeah, the LA Sports Arena.
I was sitting on the roof, basically.
Yeah.
The ceiling.
Yep.
The chairs were way up there. And
that place sucks, man. I recently went because Springsteen won't play any union rooms.
Yeah.
So I go there, and it's funny how fat America has gotten because I'm in this chair, and I'm like, how small are these fucking chairs? They're wooden.
Yeah.
You know, the old wood ones that fold down. And I'm just like, and then the snack bar was from 1952.
I bet.
And it actually had a TV in the snack bar that was one of those old ones that had the 12 channels.
No
just
way.
Turned out, it was just sitting in there for, you know, like they hadn't they ever removed it.
No.
And I was like, God, this place is small and old. It's cool if you're on the floor, but anywhere else.
Yeah,
but that's where the concerts were there. And then you got bigger and you went to the Forum.
Yes.
Which they recently redid the Forum.
Really?
Which is God.
The interior?
You have to go.
Really?
It's the best concert place on the planet now.
That's awesome.
Yeah, the guys from...
I saw Rammstein there. That was the last time that I'd gone there. Yeah.
Well, the guys from Madison Square Garden bought it and put like $1 billion into it.
Wow.
And it made it only a concert hall. And the entire hallways are a museum. Huge photos of who played there back in the day, like Zeppelin.
Really?
And you'll just see like killer Zepp photos, Elton John, you know, Evel Knievel, all this shit, you know?
Evel Knievel, yeah.
Yeah, that's our era.
Yeah, yeah.
So you see the Nudes, that's your first show. When do you see Kiss? Do you see Kiss?
I never saw Kiss until probably about a year ago.
Whoa.
A year and a half ago.
That's insane, right?
Never went to a Kiss concert.
Now, were you going to concerts?
Not really. I was focusing on, you know, playing concerts.
Right.
You know, playing shows. I had gone to, I went to see AC/DC, For Those About to Rock.
Oh, God, that's great. But that's all the way up in, like, 81.
No, that's 81, 82, yeah.
Yeah.
What other shows? I saw Dio.
Ooh.
Awesome. I saw Fastway.
Oh, remember that? Say what you will.
Yeah.
So great.
You know,
I recently got that for $1. Yeah. Mint condition on vinyl.
Awesome.
That's a great
what
band.
Another one? So several other shows. Wow. Yeah, I guess I can't remember off the bat right now.
Yeah. So I was reading also that you tried to DJ for a while. That's
tried. I was a DJ for a while.
Is that 70s?
Yeah, 70. Fuck. Let me see. Yeah, around 79, between 79 and 82.
Well, what are you spinning? Disco?
Disco. And rock.
You know
and
what?
Rock.
I love disco. Like,
dude, there's some stuff that's pretty good. Some of it's cheesy.
Yeah, of course.
Some of it's classic, and it's great. My friend one of my best friends that lived around the corner as I was growing up, his dad bought him a mobile, you know, built a mobile disco DJ unit.
Right.
So we just loaded up in a van, lights, speakers. And
yeah.
We play parties. We play high school dances, Sadie Hawkins dances, all that shit.
And would you do announcements too?
Yeah. Well, I wouldn't do it. He would do it. I would spin when he wanted to take a break and take a shot of whiskey or something. At that time, we had a little bottle back, you know, behind the DJ gear, It was great. It was really good times. I used to come home at 4 in the morning. My mom used to be pissed. You know, let me remind you, I was 14, 15 years old.
That's crazy, right?
And my parents would be like, man, you're doing this at 15. What are you going to be doing when you're 18? You're going to be a hoodlum.
Yeah. You know, yeah. And that's a weird era.
In jail. Yeah.
Like Patty Hearst got kidnapped. A lot of people don't know.
There was a lot of the Hillside 70s, Strangler.
Hillside Strangler. Yeah. You know, the 70s are fucking dark. And I think that's why my comedy's so dark. Because, you know, you're growing up with that gas wars and Nick. Nixon, and then Jimmy Carter, the Ayatollah, you know, all that Iran stuff, and then the kidnapping of Patty Hearst, and like you said, serial killers. You have Jim Jones and the Guyana Grape, you know, that People's Temple. It's a fucking scary-ass time, man.
Yeah, it was weird, and they were, you know, we were looking forward to the 80s, you know, and then they said, oh, there's going to be a third world war, you know. And
I believe that when I was young.
Yeah, me too.
I really thought, man, like, I'm just going to have fun and ride my BMX bike and listen to rock and play Little League and shit. It was so weird. That's a dark era, man.
Yeah. It was good. It was good, though. So I did that for a while, and but it was weird in my life because I was kind of living two genres, because Cubans, you know, when I would go out, my parents and they would go to these parties and stuff, they're into dancing.
That's right.
It's part of the culture. So obviously, you know, dance music, you know, was always played, you know, whether it's Cuban music or disco. But then at home, I dig into my metal albums, my rock albums.
Yeah.
I'd listen to this music and really, you know, get into it. And then, of course, you know, you get into high school, you start smoking weed. And all you do is listen to music and hang out with people that like the same music as you do. And so it was weird. It was really strange.
I'm the same way.
Living.
I talked about it because, like, Purple Rain, it wasn't cool to say you like that. You know, and it was that era of, like, Metallica, like, Kill Posers and all that.
Right,
it was, like, real. I was, like, you know, Bailoff would be like, Kill Posers!
Yeah,
and people would be like, fuck all that.
Bailoff, man.
Yeah, loved him, right? But you know, Saturday Night Fever, the film, to me, it had such an impact because I was like, man.
Here we are talking about Saturday Night Fever.
It's true, though.
Yeah.
I really, man, you know what what I liked about Saturday Night Fever, and I think that I've strived for my whole life, which with bands or motorcycle people or anything, was that was like a gang of dudes that believed in something. And it was like living your life for today.
Yeah.
Let's go out, get fucking pussy, do some partying and dancing and just whatever. And I felt like that. I always loved the scene where he walks up to the disco and he goes, hey, assholes, we're the faces. Get it together.
Yeah,
like they're getting ready to go. I always wanted that feeling of walking in and people going like, oh, there they are, you know?
Yeah.
And that became my thing with the band and even riding motorcycles with guys, you know? It's a crew. I think you're looking for even like the mob.
It's a crew. Yeah.
Godfather, you love that persona.
Uh-huh.
It's strange, but I understand what you're saying. We were in the mix of like, hey, some of this disco is fucking great.
Yeah.
You know, and I really got into Funkadelic, Parliament.
Yeah.
James Brown, just saw that movie.
Hell yeah. Parliament.
Right? This shit is incredible.
Mothership. Oh, what's I had the Parliament live. You see, I have two older brothers, and the oldest brother was into R&B and funk. And my other brother, Danny, he was into rock and metal.
Right.
Or rock. Metal really didn't exist at that time.
And acid rock.
Acid, right.
Zeppelin was considered acid rock.
Really?
Well, I mean, you know, when they put out that, like, Immigrant Song.
And, with that little booklet, not the booklet, a little wheel on the album.
Zeppelin 3.
Cream also was kind of, you know, acid driven. I mean, those album covers were amazing.
Oh, God,
Yeah, that era was amazing.
It really is, right? I mean, it's not that we're old, like, but I often say that without that music, I would be dead.
Yeah.
And it's so fucking good. You know, like, we're just watching that Nugent stuff, and it's like a punch in the face. Each guy can play the shit out of their instrument.
Yeah.
Each guy can sing.
Yeah.
They can tune their instrument. They can change a guitar string. You know what I mean?
Live. While they're playing.
They're changing a string, playing fucking Stranglehold, you know, whatever. It was like, it was magic, right?
Yeah, it was different. I mean, there's still musicians today, you know, that live up to that, but not as many.
No.
I mean, they rely a lot on, you know, computers to fix everything, which then, you know, they don't work on their, you know, their craft.
Yeah, not at all. Yeah,
no, they don't work on it. And, you know, they don't really improve. It's really weird. Oh, I could fix this. I don't need to learn it, you know.
Yeah, I was just reading some guy. He was saying, like, yeah, I just go in the studio for like 2 hours, sang the whole record, and then they just fix it. And I was just like, man, it would take me 2 days sometimes to sing a song. Because you would rush stuff, or you'd be too slow. You're not in the pocket. Mm. You're out of key. You want it to be just fucking great, you know? Yeah.
One thing I've been doing a lot is recording on a tape.
Yeah, so great. Yeah.
And just recently I recorded 6 songs on tape, and it's so great. The sound, it's so rich and full that you really don't get that out of digital. Now, I don't want to sound like, you know, one of these guys, oh, I don't like digital. I want to stay with the analog. But there's something to say about that. I mean, it really built, you know, your musicianship, you know, having to record on the tape, because you only have, you have to get it right.
You got to get it right.
Or punch you in, you know.
You had the guy splicing the tape. That'd take 2 hours. Then the chemistry's gone.
Yeah. So, it's definitely
tape is amazing, right?
Tape is great.
Where do you get tape now?
I think there's only one manufacturer in the U.S. that manufactures 2-inch tape.
Yeah.
And they're like $350 a pop.
Wow.
Yeah, for what, a half hour? Well, it depends how fast you
are. Yeah, if you're going 16 or 24.
Exactly.
You know, whatever speed you're going, you know.
Frames per second, FPS, I don't know.
Yeah.
But that shit's, it's really.
I mean, we got old school guys still around, like Jack White is incredible.
Yes.
You know,
that guy's great.
That fucking guy's a god.
I love his guitar playing.
He's really so good, fan, right?
Yeah. And I just jammed with his drummer. This girl, Carla, her first name's Carla.
Oh, yeah, he's got, like, girls in his band, right?
Yeah.
That's
this
right.
This girl's got great feel, great chops, and I just did a little drum duet with her, you know, for this project. And, dude, it's great. What he's doing is really, really cool. It's cutting edge.
Yeah, yeah.
He's doing what we were doing, you know, back in the day, which is like the term I don't like to use, because this is the fucking day, man. You know?
These are
the days.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, but he's doing things now that we were doing back then, so he's kind of bringing it back. You know, just like Grohl, Dave Grohl's doing the same thing, yeah.
Josh from Queens.
Yeah, they're doing
you
that
know,
as
people
well.
That people that are real, you know, like real deal, that don't give a fuck if they have hits or whatever.
No, you're just putting out music.
To play music.
Yeah, that's how I feel. That's all I do is you know, write with my band and record. You know, we already have one album ready to go. We have an EP, you know, we're about to track some guitars on.
Yep.
So, you know, we're just always recording, always creating. You know,
that's what you do, right?
Yeah.
I mean, you're 49. What are you going to do? Not do it anymore?
Yeah. I want to continue to document and continue to record, you know, throughout the rest of my life.
Yep.
From now until, you know.
Hell yeah, man.
Yeah.
Now, I grew up in the Bay Area, which was the thrash mecca. Uh-huh. Let's talk about how Slayer starts. I mean, because it's an insane band. Like, there's no band like it. Uh-huh. So, like, when you're first starting and you're in the garage, you get it together, like you and Carrie, and then Jeff comes around, and then you got Tom, and you start to play. Who are you listening to at the time?
At that time, I was listening to Maiden.
Maiden.
I had just discovered Iron Maiden. I was listening to Motorhead. I was listening to Judas Priest. Who else during that time?
So it's the British, like Saxon.
Yes. Saxon?
Oh, God. Denim and leather.
No.
What oh, the steel. Yes. Yeah, Wheels of Steel.
Wheels of Steel.
Yeah.
I really got into that.
Yeah.
That was after Denim and Leather, right?
I think it's before, right?
No, Power and the Glory.
Power and the... Oh, man. That's a good one. Can you feel the power?
There you go.
And then it ends kind of with Crusader.
Yeah.
I did see the Crusader tour because Accept opened on the Balls to the Wall tour, and it was one of the most epic shows I've ever seen.
I think I saw Saxon as well on that tour with Fastway mentioned.
Yeah, awesome, yeah, right?
That was really, really good. I remember
Saxon was an amazing band, yeah, right? And maybe
Biff got on my nerves, you know, with the fan in his hair.
Yeah,
his
he was like this British David Lee Roth.
Yeah,
you know, which was, he had the blonde hair and he just stood up there, Crusader. But the songs, man, I love
songs
that.
Songs were good.
Dallas 1 p.m.
I couldn't remember a title off their album.
Oh, they had some great songs.
Just The Power and the Glory, that's it. The sound quality was really good. Actually, that's what, you know, really captivated me about that. You know, not only the songwriting, but, you know, the sound was really
good. Right. And what Maiden? Are you talking Rothschild? Are you talking...
Circus Magazine. Remember Circus?
Oh, yeah, of course. I loved it.
I remember flipping through Circus and seeing a little, like, quarter-page article, you know, advertisement... for the Iron Maiden Killers album.
Oh, wow.
And when I saw Eddie on the cover,
yep.
Whoa, this is heavy. This is what I want. So I bought it, and I loved that album. Then, of course, I bought the first album. I bought all these little singles, these little 45s, and just really, really liked that band.
So good, right?
Yeah, really, really good. And Clive Burr was one of my big influences.
That's, you know, really?
In my later years.
Yeah, because he was the metal drummer. You know what I mean? Like he didn't play metal. It was almost kind of a different style.
It was.
You know, it wasn't like the thrash beats or anything.
No, no.
You
know, came later, and it was juiced and milked, you know, for God, I don't know. It still is. But
so you guys get together and you're into that music.
Yeah, we're into that music. I mean, very early on when I first met Carrie and we met at his house.
You guys live in the same neighborhood?
Yeah, we live blocks away.
That's so fucking crazy, right?
Well, I mean, I think probably a few months before I met him, there were these other guys that I knew locally that, you know, were guitar players, and they come by and visit me, you know, and watch me play drums. And I was really young at that time.
What kind 16. Of kit you got at the time?
At that time, I had a Maxwin. No, or did I have my double bass? No, at that time I had my Maxwin by Pearl. It was like kind of a, not a ripoff of Pearl.
It was like just kind of low-end ones.
Grade,
kind of blue-collar Pearl.
Exactly. Yeah, my dad bought it for me for like $350.
A butcher's Pearl.
A butcher's Pearl, yeah.
Farmer John model.
$350. And
that's a lot of money, man.
Yeah.
You know?
And I remember I bought it at Calvano's Music, which was on Tweedy Boulevard in Southgate. And Carrie used to take lessons, guitar lessons there from some guy.
Right.
And I think he played in a band with the guitar teacher from that store. And that's the band that Carrie and Tom had called Quits.
Right.
I mean, so it was, two guitar players, Tom. And I remember seeing them perform at Southgate Park on Halloween. I was dressed as Angus Young.
Yeah.
And there was a band playing on stage. I remember Carrie with his little OP shorts and...
OP shorts. What style of music were they?
Little OP shorts and... Huh?
What style of music were they?
Cover tunes.
Oh, cover tunes.
Yeah, I don't know what song. I can't remember.
OP shorts were dope, right? And the lightning bolt shirts.
Lightning bolt shirts. Hang 10. You know,
Hang 10, hell yeah. Some Vans.
Yeah, I remember that. And they had this other drummer at the time. So I met Carrie, and he gave me this whole list, which I was impressed because, you know, he knew his music.
Yeah.
And a whole list of songs. I said, wow, I know this one, this one, this one, this one. I pointed out all the songs that I knew. And so he came over my house, and we played in my garage for like 3 or 4 times.
Just no bass, just guitar.
No bass, just
you guys were early White Stripes.
Yeah, right?
Right?
And then he said, I have this guitar player, you know, I'm thinking about bringing in. And obviously it was Jeff.
Yeah.
You know, at the time we were into Priest and Maiden. And then he brought Jeff in and it really clicked, you know. And I remember us rehearsing in my garage and then later, you know, we needed a singer. And he said, well, I think there's somebody... that might be into doing this. And this is a weird story because I go to Tom's house you know, I take my drums over there and we're jamming in front of Tom to see if he wants to, you know, join the band. And I recognized Tom. And he had played in another band. He was 15 and I was probably 11. I think that's what he was 15 and I was like 11. I know he's like 4 years older than me or something. And I said, I know you from somewhere. Have you played this Cuban club? My parents used to go to this Cuban club down the street. And they'd have bands play there all the time. And Tom played in a band called Trade Winds.
Trade Winds.
At 15, this bass player. I remember seeing this bass player with really long hair and really jamming and getting into the songs. And I was impressed. You know, I was like, damn, this is cool.
Yeah, you remembered him, right?
I remembered him.
Right.
And he said, he looked at me and he was like, you remember that? I mean, this was many years later. And he said, I said, yeah, man, I remember you playing with this band, you know, Trade Winds. And you guys played like Long Train Running by the Doobie Brothers, Taking Care of Business by Bachman Turner Overdrive. Wow, this all this shit's coming back to me now. I loved it. And knowing, you know, meeting him and crossing paths again, you know, it was an interesting moment. And, but yeah, that's one of those stories. So we got together and, we started, we played songs like, Living After Midnight, Highway Star. We started playing High Schools.
Keg Parties.
Keg Parties. We played, we would rent our own halls and play those. And,
and when you do know, you start finding the when do you start hustled. Finding the style?
Because
I saw some early photos on Murder in the Front Row.
Yeah,
Like there's like a photo of you guys playing a high school boy. It's just wild. You look like
yeah. There's
just
there's
kids.
A lot of pictures. Yeah, I remember Carrie and Jeff. Carrie used to buy his clothes at this girl shop, and he used to cut them. You know, it used to be like a Van Halen.
Yeah.
It was like a Van Halen era. So colors, stripes.
Absolutely.
Anything abstract, weird.
Yeah, that Diver Down era of Van Halen where they're really wearing like spandex and bandanas and all kinds of shit tied on you. Whatever you found from some girl's house on the way out.
Exactly.
Yeah.
And that was the look. So I remember I had this kind of tiger print shirt and, you know, green spandex pants.
Yeah.
Oh, man. Tom wore gold spandex pants. And then we started getting heavy. You know, then we started, you know, kind of getting away from that look. And we started, you know, wearing makeup, you know, just eyeliner just to darken up our eyes, look a little evil. And, you know, we slowly started changing our colorful selves into dark and, you know, things started, you know, turning black.
Right.
And spandex turned black, all the shirts, everything, you know.
Yeah, bullet belts,
studs.
Boots.
I remember playing on stage with motorcycle boots, playing double bass drum, motorcycle boots. But, hey, we had to be heavy.
What gets you into the double bass? Is it Maiden?
No, because Maiden didn't have double bass at that time. However, Clive Burr created this drum beat like on the song Transylvania or Genghis Khan, one of those songs. I don't remember. There was a particular drum beat that he did, and it sounded like double bass, but it didn't. It was like a hi-hat bass drum rhythm, and so I taught myself that rhythm by listening because I didn't take lessons. All I did was listen to music and try to mimic what I heard, you know, into the drums. And then what I did was I adapted that drum beat that Clive Burr did, and I added, instead of using the hi-hat, which he used, I added the bass drum. So I was able to create, you know, kind of carry over that pattern, you know, into the double bass. And that's kind of where I got into it. And also Motorhead, No Sleep Till Hammersmith.
Oh, sick.
That album inspired double bass.
Right. I mean, you're like the double bass king. I remember the first time I heard it, I was like, whoa, what the fuck?
And that's all recorded on tape.
Yeah, right.
That's the beauty of it. You know, today, you know, you get a, you get these guys using, you know, gear, you know, effects or gear that quantizes the drums, you know, makes everything sound perfect.
It sounds and fake, at that time, too. Like, yeah. do they put, like, quarters on the bass drums
or something?
Oh,
remember that?
Yeah, it was like, da, 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 da.
Yeah. Like, oh, you put a quarter on it. Yeah,
what the fuck is that?
Why don't you just tell your sound engineer to turn up the highs to get a little more clicky sound instead of adding quarters, really?
It's so dumb.
Oh, dumb. Really dumb. But, you know.
So you guys start playing some dark stuff
we
now?
We started playing, yeah, I remember playing high school. We played my high school. We played Carrie's high school at the time. I think he was going to Downey or Warren. He'd jump around from one high school to another. We play like Number of the Beast.
Oh, sick.
Iron Maiden, Highway Star, Sin City.
Tom Mariah doing Sin City.
Yeah.
That'd be great, right?
Yeah, by AC/DC. What other songs we do? Can't think right now. On Fire by Van Halen.
Sick. One of the greatest songs they ever did.
Judas Priest. We used to play
Living After Midnight.
Genocide.
That's a great one, right?
We used to play that. I think we played Living After Midnight for a while, but you know that one became a little too.
Yeah,
cheesy.
It's just standard, yeah. I remember we used to do Breaking the Law.
Oh, we did
Breaking the Law! Yeah. People love that one, man, at a party. Grinder. So great. Grinder! Looking for me! How great is that, man?
Brilliant.
Some of the best. I saw Judas Priest the first time by accident, because I wasn't into Priest. I didn't, you know... go to see Def Leppard on the High and Dry tour. They opened on the Solar Angels Point Entry tour.
I saw Point of Entry tour in Long Beach, yeah.
Unbelievable. So I go, Def Leppard's playing. They play about 35, 40 minutes, blow my mind. And then I'm just...
In Through the Night was a great album.
On Through the Night, so great. Wasted, and My Wine.
I think Slayer used to play a couple of those songs off that album.
So, incredible.
Wasted.
Wasted.
Yeah.
Wasted. Yeah. Out of my head.
Wasted.
I wish I was dead.
Yeah, right?
So great. Yeah. Those, I can't believe how young those guys were and killing it. But also, you guys were young as shit, too.
I was still in school, in high school, in my senior year, when I was recording Show No Mercy.
That's incredible.
Yeah. And I graduated in 83. And the Show No Mercy was released in December of 83.
Right.
So I was out of school. Bam.
Show No Mercy was a strange record to me. I never, I didn't get into Slayer. Mm. I kind of went backwards because I go South of Heaven. I see you guys at the Stone.
Uh-huh.
And I'm like, oh my God, this could be like one of the fucking darkest, great bands ever.
Uh-huh.
And then, of course, Seasons is my Bible. And then I go back to Rain and Blood. You know, and then I go back.
Rediscovered everything. Yeah, that's what I do, too.
Right.
Yeah.
Haunting the Chapel, that stuff.
Yeah.
But, Show No Mercy is so, so hardcore. Like, I mean, when you guys are making...
Dude, that album, that was difficult, at least for me. I have an interesting story to add to this. When I recorded that, my drums, either they were really loud. There was something about my drums, either how I tuned them or my cymbals were really loud. But the engineer didn't have experience in recording these kinds of drums. And he suggested that I tape my cymbals, you know, with towels to dampen them. And he said, okay, we're just going to record the drums first, and then you're going to overdub cymbals.
Oh, my God. Yeah, like how hard
so I'm
is
listening
that?
To psh, you know, listening to the drum tracks psh, psh, and then trying to hit the cymbals right, you know, with the bass drum, and you hear it today. I mean, if you really listen closely, the cymbals, you know, are off.
The rhythm's got to be all wrong, right? Because it
feels weird.
I mean, when you're hitting shit, it's a push and pull, it's a feel thing on drums.
Uh-huh.
If you're going in there and punching it, it's just like, what the fuck?
Well, the cymbals are supposed to be in line with the kick drum.
That's right.
You know, and they're not. They're a little late, a little early. Oh, man. But that, those were experiences at the time, you know, that we had, you know, live and learn. We, you know, the engineer, even to this day, you probably know who he is, Bill Metoyer.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
He was the one that recorded that album.
Oh, my God.
And I still, you know, bug him about that. But I'm sure it's getting old after all these years. I don't talk to him about it anymore. But, yeah, it's one of those things, man. It was great.
When do you guys start thinking like, all right, let's get kind of dark here? Like, I know it was kind of popular around then, you know, like Satan stuff. It's like Maiden, Number of the Beast.
Yeah.
You've got some dark stuff. Like you said, Venom.
Venom came out. Merciful Fate.
Merciful Fate, man.
Yeah, I mean, started getting into that music during that period. But there was a period where obviously Jeff, he shaved his head.
Yeah.
He had this girlfriend at the time, and she was like a little, this punk chick, you know? So I don't know if she got him into punk or some of his friends that he was hanging out with, but he shows up at rehearsal with a shaved head and all this new music.
Wow. Like Black Flag, Dead Kennedys, that kind of stuff. Circle Jerks.
Circle Jerks, The Germs, all this stuff.
Because that's all big in Long Beach, Orange County, you know, like.
Right.
That's
right.
Big, man.
And he was right there in Long Beach, in North Long Beach. That's where he was raised. And when I heard this music, it just opened up like a floodgate of ideas and drum patterns and a whole direction that I can go in that I understood. And it fed my adrenaline at that time. Shit, like I said, I was 16 years
Absolutely.
Old, 17 years old.
It's so a skateboard era.
Right.
You know, maybe some speed, weed. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
It's just, you know, booze.
Yeah.
You're getting some fucking Jack Daniels going.
Yeah. Oh, no, actually, we'd buy those Mickey's.
Oh, yeah, Mickey's Big Mouth.
Big Mouth.
Yeah.
We'd empty it.
Yeah.
And fill it up with water, take them back and say, hey, man, these are warm.
Oh, no way.
Can we get another six pack? Yeah, sure.
That's a great story. Man, that's up there with my empty guitar case. I just walked right backstage free into concerts because security guard was just some minimum wage guy.
Yeah.
If you got a case, he's like, he's got to be in the band. I just roll right into big shows.
Oh, man.
And then later, the band would just use the cover of their new record. So I'd buy the cassette, snip the cover off, laminate it, and roll right in with a laminate.
Wow.
A lot
that's
of
awesome.
Shows free. But that's a great one. I haven't heard that one. Beer.
Yeah.
These are warm.
Oh,
yeah, because that was screw off.
Yeah. So you could even screw them back on.
Come on. That's good. Imagine the guy, he puts them back in the fridge. The guy buys them. Some construction guy just got off work. He all day swinging a hammer. What is this shit? Or another guy that tries Mickey's the first time and he goes, this shit
like
tastes like water.
Oh, man. We were bad.
So you guys, Jeff's bringing in the punk element.
Jeff's bringing in the punk element and I think at that point was every guitar riff to me, I was able to, double time it. Instead of just quarter notes, it'd be eighth notes.
Right.
So I just flip it around. It would be, let's say, Living After Midnight instead of doom, ba, doom, doom, ba, da, da. It'd go, you know, da, 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 da.
Yeah.
Da, da. So it gave it
straight on. Yeah.
That straight on more.
And then now you've got the train rolling. Now
it's just
the
machine.
Yeah. Yeah, right.
So, yeah, I thank Jeff for that. You know, I'm sure I would have, you know, come across punk, but he showed me the passion.
Yeah.
Behind punk music and what it was all about. And I still love it. There's no music probably on this earth that gives me the adrenaline rush that, you know, listening to Circle Jerks or listening to the Dead Kennedys.
Right.
Or any band like that. That energy.
I just
at that
got
time.
The Fear First record on vinyl.
Really?
Mint, you know?
It's awesome.
They put that on. And it's weird because I wasn't into the punk. I like Dead Kennedys, Holiday in Cambodia.
Yeah.
I loved Devo.
I like Devo too.
Still love Devo to this day.
I remember seeing him on Fridays or those video shows late at night.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
You know,
I was obsessed
Saturday
with Devo.
Live.
But I didn't get into Black Flag and stuff. We had the Mabue Garden across the street
from
the Stone.
Which is punk.
That's right.
Club,
and which, by the way, 2 weeks ago, the owner passed away, Ness, which was incredible. I didn't even know he was still alive, but man, what an icon that guy. I mean, he had a Vietnamese restaurant and it becomes a complete punk. It's CBGB of the West Coast,
yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
But all that was going on in there. And I did enjoy the insane violence of the pits, those early pits, man, and slam dancing,
yeah,
and the radicalness of it. Mm-hmm. But I was getting more into the early Metallica, Exodus, you know.
There was a lot of tape trading.
Tape trading, for
what's
sure.
What's that record store in San Francisco? Record Vault.
Record Vault was my...
Yeah,
was
you used to buy the bootlegs.
Dude, remember that?
I remember going there and just like buying
They had the
shit.
Bootlegs in there, man.
I loved it.
They had everything from England. That's the first time, yes, I heard Merciful Fate. I remember I went in there. The guy was scary. It was on Polk Street. He had a leather jacket on, mm-hmm, and they were playing C-U-N-T. And I was like, I was pretty radical as a kid, but I was like, I don't know how I feel about it. It's like, yeah, C-U-N-T, that's, yeah, what you are, you know. And the guy was so scary, like, ah, you know, King Diamond. Yeah. And then, you know, that store, though, was just the mecca of metal, man.
It was.
The guy knew everything. He'd be like, here's Maiden. You're going to like it. And he'd be like, are you sure it's like $9? I only have $9. Get it. And I'd leave and like, fuck, this great Maiden. But that's where I found out about like Def Leppard, you know, all that British heavy metal, all that stuff, Saxon. Yeah. And he would have in-stores with these guys. They would be
there. I remember doing in-stores there. Metallica did in-stores
there. Fuck yeah, man. Yeah. Metallica, you'd meet like Def Leppard was in there, right. Saxon, Motorhead. That was like Lemmy's joint.
Yep.
But that shit
was... that place. It was great.
But that kind of San Fran was really building something, you know?
I think what really crossed over or kind of helped punk to cross over into metal or vice versa was Motorhead.
Yeah.
Because I remember seeing a lot of punks with Motorhead shirts.
That's right.
So
and bullet belts.
Bullet belts. And there was something. There was something there. And I think possibly that's the reason why I got into Motorhead. And, you know, things just started changing for me at that time, you know, with the double bass and, and you know, what I enjoyed in music, you know. But definitely punk was a big influence, you know, in this band.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So you leave after Show No Mercy, right? You leave the band?
Or do you,
what's the first time you leave the band? After Seasons?
No, after Rain and Blood.
Rain and Blood, that's right.
Yeah.
Because you're out on the road.
They went out on the road for a couple few months with some other drummer. I don't know his name. I think they opened up for Wasp.
Right.
Yeah.
That's.
And then I think I was gone for like 3 months and then came back. You know, Rick Rubin was the one. Dude, you got to go back.
Yeah.
You got to go back, dude.
Rick Rubin's a god. You like Rick Rubin?
I love Rick Rubin.
I think Rick Rubin, like, there's a time that you got to think about Rick Rubin. Everything he did is just incredible.
He loved music.
He loved
music. That's just bottom line. He loved music and saw passion in all different styles, whether it was rap, you know, rock, metal. You know, he saw whatever band, if it had passion... or had, you know, this intensity or drive, you know, he was part of it, you know.
Yeah.
And I think he's an amazing producer, and I look up to him today, you know, at his
Absolutely.
Work,
I know, mean, some of the bands he signed, I listen to right now, Masters of Reality.
Yeah.
I think Chris
Goss.
I like
that album.
Yeah, that thing is fucking John Brown, bring him down. You know, that shit is so outside the box.
Yeah.
And it's the... beginning of desert rock. I mean, Chris Goss is the desert rock god. No Chris Goss, you have no Caius.
The Cult album.
Electric record.
Electric.
Is unbelievable.
The drums on that are
it's
amazing.
It's insane, right?
Yep.
And then, of course, having Kerry King play on the Beastie Boys.
Uh-huh. Yeah.
I mean, this is all like...
Run DMC.
Yeah, it's all genius stuff. Rubin, I mean, what a god. Get him in the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame.
Yeah.
You know, what are you doing? But to me, American Records was Slayer to me. I felt like it was Rick Rubin and it was Slayer. That's really a fucking thing.
We almost didn't land a deal with Ruben. We were signed to Metal Blade at that time, and I caught wind, I don't know from who, told me that there's a major label that's interested in you guys. And I loved it. I was like, what? A major label? You know, here we are with Metal Blade. Yeah, yep. That's great. But if a major wanted you, that's something
especially
else.
During that time.
So I remember mentioning it to the guys and, you know, hearing this rumor that somebody in New York City from a major label wants the band. No, we're signed to Metal Blade. We're okay with Metal Blade. You know, I remember Kerry saying that, or Tom. You know, they just didn't want to, you know, step out of where they were.
Yeah.
And I said, guys, this is big. You know, we need to pursue this. So I remember calling Columbia Records and asking for this guy called Rick Rubin.
Wow.
You know, and
he worked there at the time?
No, he didn't.
Oh.
But since Def Jam was distributed
by
Columbia.
Oh, I got you. Yeah, that's right.
You know, I just called New York City. I said, give me Columbia Records. And I said, I need to speak with Rick Rubin. They said, oh, well, he's not here with Columbia. He has his own office. And they gave me a number, and I called. And then I set up some kind of meeting where Rick Rubin came to Los Angeles. And I remember him picking me up from my mom and dad's house.
Yeah.
Him coming in and everything.
Classic.
Yeah, this was like years ago. He was there with Glenn Friedman.
Glenn Friedman.
Glenn Friedman is a skateboard photographer. Skateboarding and punk rock photographer.
Dope.
From, you know, late 70s.
Yeah, that's
and,
cool.
Yeah, and he... late 70s, early 80s, and they showed up, and we got in my car. I had a 69 Dodge Charger, you know, like Dukes
dope.
Of Hazzard.
Yeah, that's great. And, I had 69 Roadrunner.
Oh, really? With the wing? With the
No, that's the Super Bird.
Super Bird.
Same car, no wing, but R1 red,
wow.
Convertible, 440.
Fuck.
Yeah.
I had a 383 big block.
Yeah, that's a great motor, too, because it lasts forever. It doesn't overheat.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah,
right.
Yeah, did you have a column shift?
Yeah, I did.
Yeah.
Column shift. I wanted the one on the floor, but
that car's all looks. You know,
$1,000.
Yeah. Oh God.
I bought it for $1,000 and sold it for $1,000.
That's great, right?
And so we went to rehearsal, and he spoke to us, and next thing you know, we're bought out of Metal Blade.
So when he comes to see it, does he say, "Hey, man, I heard of you. I saw you live." How does he know Slayer? You know,
I think he heard about us through some of the shows that we were playing. We'd play L'Amour in Brooklyn.
That's right. That was the metal place.
That was the metal club there.
L'Amour's.
And I guess maybe some of his scouts, some of his people, you know.
Yeah, because he was into punk, too.
Yeah.
Yeah, he's like a punk guy. He's like a hip-hop guy.
He's into music.
He's into music.
He loves music. And... yeah, I think that's how he heard of us. Because, I mean, we really didn't play any other venues at that time.
Right.
You know, except L'Amour.
So when you do Rain of Blood with him, what's that like? I mean, that's one of his early records, right? Like, is it his first, second record?
I remember his influence on my drumming. You know, him explaining to me, he would explain to me, like, some of the drum rolls. You know, create a drum roll before this section. It kind of leads up to it. Just kind of teaching me, you know,
yeah.
And, you know, giving me advice. And to this day, I value that advice. And because it's kind of shaped my songwriting and understanding song structure and everything. And so he had a lot to do with the way those songs came together. You know, they were probably longer songs at that time.
Yeah.
But then he came in and says, no, shorten it up, you know.
Yeah, because what's the record, like 28 minutes?
Yeah. Yeah. And so on the cassette, if you remember, a cassette had the same album on both sides.
That's,
you know?
So great, right?
It's awesome.
You got auto reverse, it just kicks on
just
again.
Keeps going, yeah. So, you know, he had a big part, I think, in putting those songs together. And in shortening them, because like Hell Awaits were long songs. Kill Again, you know, like on Hell Awaits.
Yeah.
Those songs were long.
And so, what's that from? Like a Maiden influence or something? Because Maiden had long songs.
Yeah, I think. Really, in like the song structures or the songs on Rain or Blade, you don't need to add anymore to
yeah.
it.
Yeah, and also you, that's got to be the punk, right?
Like yeah, the punk attitude,
right? Yeah. yeah,
songs back in the day with punk, it was what a minute, minute and a half, 2 minutes,
yep.
max. You had you said what you wanted to say. On to the next. And then all this drawn out leads and
yeah.
you know all these rhythms and
parts you don't need.
Yeah, parts you just don't need. Trim the fat.
It's know? Almost like comedy.
Yeah.
If you're too wordy, people are out.
Yeah.
Although I worship Maiden, you know, yeah. There's different Maiden that I like, all of it. But yeah. pretty much at the end of the day, when you throw on Rothschild, you're yeah, going, great. Like, oh my God.
Yeah. yeah. Yeah, you just got to keep the song simple and to the point, because otherwise you lose interest. So, yeah, Ruben was an amazing part of the band's career. And yeah. I really honestly don't feel that if it wasn't, I feel that if Ruben wasn't in the picture, Slayer would not have gotten the recognition that we
yeah,
that
yeah.
would have gotten. I really don't feel, because his input was very integral to the development of the band.
Yeah, I mean, he to me, he's the fifth member.
Yeah.
You know, I really feel, because whenever you think Slayer, you think American and you think Rick Rubin.
Yeah.
You know, I remember a key specific thing I was at. I think it was the Concrete Convention. Mm-hmm. It was either that or the NAMM show, but I had got this invite from Rubin to go hear Seasons. They didn't tell us the name of the record or whatever. It was the new Slayer record. And we just went to like some warehouse. It was kind of a black box warehouse
yeah.
with a huge sound system. We walked in, just stood around. There was beers, started drinking, and all of a sudden Seasons came on. And it was just like, and then we each got a shirt. It was just American Records in the back. It said Slayer. And I was like, this is genius. Because wow. of course we're all going to go like, we heard the new Slayer. Yeah. You know, uh-huh. he had great, great ideas, yeah. you know.
Yeah.
And that's boy, great. Did Slayer grow from Rain and Blood to South of Heaven to yeah. Seasons, you know. Yeah. They're so different, yeah, but so epic. Yeah. Some people think that South of Heaven is the weakest, and I really like that record.
It had a different mix. The drums were on the forefront. You know, Ruben, I think, was a big fan of the drums. And, you know, after the first record, I think he decided, you know, also developing sound, you know, developing his craft, you know, I think he was dialing in the drums to be a little more dry, a little more in your face, kind of like the Cult album.
Right.
You know, Electric.
That shit was that great. You could tell he's into AC/DC at the time.
Right.
You
so know. He was producing albums, you know, with those tones and sounds. So I think that's the reason why. And it wasn't, you know, guitar heavy.
Yeah.
Like I said, it was more drums, I think.
Well, that's the unique sound of Slayer. You know, it's yeah. that, like those breaks. You know what I mean? Yeah. You just go like, oh my God, that's Dave, you know? Yeah. It's funny, my whole life I thought South of Heaven went, I live South of Heaven. I live South of Heaven.
Yeah, I don't know. What is it? On and
it's
on?
It's on and on South of Heaven. And to me, it just never made sense. I thought I live South of Heaven meaning you live in hell. The yeah. other, you know what I mean?
Yeah, yeah.
I live South of Heaven. And it was so funny. Yeah. For years, just, I live South of Heaven.
And then you realize, oh, shit, it's on and on South Heaven.
Yeah, I was like, what the hell's that? Yeah. On and on South Heaven.
Right.
It's really amazing that time, right? Of you've got like Ride the Lightning
uh-huh.
and Master of Puppets. You've got Exodus, Bonded by Blood. This genre, it's incredible. When I think back to being at the Stone on Broadway, there's no way I think these bands are around 30 years later.
Oh, yeah.
There's no way I think
that. Still blows me away, because when I was, what, you know, 18 years old, oh, you know, music, you know, it's a tough business. You know, you don't know how long it's going to last. You know, you need to get a job. You need to,
yeah.
You know, find some other career, just something to fall back on, just in case. All right. So that was, you know, 18, 19 years old.
Yeah.
Then when I'm 25, same thing. I was told, hey, you know, this isn't going to last forever. You know, you better, you know, think of your future. All right. 35. Oh, you know, you're not going to be 45 years old to play drums on stage. Here I am, 49. I think.
Yeah.
you know, those people have given up.
Yeah, right.
It's like, you know, this is what I do for a living. So
I remember back then specifically getting a tattoo, and that meant you aren't going to ever work. Now you can work at Chipotle, just neck tattoos, oh, yeah. yeah. you know, teardrops or whatever. But back then, I remember specifically my mom saw the tattoo and was like, well, you've made your choice. And it wasn't in a bad way, but she knew you're never going to have a real job. And, you know, because wow. back then, that's the impact a tattoo had.
Right.
Yeah. You know, like Bon Scott had them, uh-huh. you know, and then later on, like GNR had them. And then, but like the really early guys that I saw were like Tom and Bon Scott, like guys that you're like, well, these guys are outlaws.
Yeah.
And they're probably not going to be around 5 years. So they don't care if they get a tattoo.
Yeah, exactly.
And my mentality was like, yeah, I want to join that club.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? So it's amazing. But the key thing I'm trying to get at is this music was played by ugly guys, you know, complete no hits, no formula. A sound. Most of the time, the singers were terrible. You know, everything's wrong, but everything's right. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean?
It just felt good.
It felt great, yeah. right? And yeah. it, the energy, and it was like, this is our, like, I remember Metallica playing Dan the Green. They were second on this bill. This is when Cliff was still alive. And they played a Scorpions headline.
Yeah.
And it was like Scorpion, it was Yngwie, Metallica, Scorpion, you know. And I remember at that point going, these guys made it. They're playing the fucking Dan the Green.
Yeah.
60,000 people for whom the bells toll.
Yeah.
Like, look at this place. They're tearing up the stadium. The kids are pulling. I go, this is it. It's on.
Yeah.
And then, you know, Slayer starts to hit, you know, and all that stuff. It's weird
we
to
just
think.
Took it, yeah, we took it to a different level.
Completely.
Slayer did, yeah. It was just brutal.
It really was. Yeah. Like, were you guys getting off on that when you're on stage?
Yeah.
You're just like, because
the first time I played San Francisco and we played the Stone.
Yeah. I was there.
That was an
the South of Heaven one?
No, before
that, the Rain and Blood?
No.
This was early.
Yeah, this is really, this is 84, 80.
Oh,
the
wow.
album was released in 83, so probably sometime in 84.
Wow.
Early 84, we played the Stone in San Francisco and it was brutal. Kids were flying.
Yeah.
You know, jumping on stage, you know, and jumping off, you know, landing on other kids, you know, it was crazy.
Yeah.
And I remember some kids even jumped on my riser to jump into the crowd because the stage wasn't that big. And
we carried
our own riser. We had this huge.
You had the hugest riser I ever saw.
We built that motherfucker.
I remember South of Heaven. You were in the roof of the Stone.
Practically.
And I remember you guys opened with South of Heaven. It was all this smoke coming out. And I was like, man, these guys are scary, man. This is fucking. And the crowd was the most insane pit I've ever seen. Dudes like, no, I can't believe eyes aren't missing. Because guys were just fisting up in the air with spike bands and beers, and they sold bottles in there, you know? And it's just going, you know? And I was like, this shit is on.
Yeah. It was intense. There was a... They used to say that before we would go on stage, there's tension in the crowd.
Yeah.
There's some kind of tension or feel that happens, you know, anticipation, you know, maybe... Whatever it is, you know, like you don't know what's going to happen. You feel like something's going to come up behind you or someone is going to stab you.
I felt that always there.
You feel that tension, like, oh shit, you know, something's going on.
It felt gangster.
Yeah, yeah.
It's crazy, man.
You felt on edge, and I think that's cool, you know.
I love that because you feel something, right, at the show. Like,
you feel it, yeah.
It's hard to feel that now.
Yeah.
There's no danger now.
Hell no.
You know what I mean? You know, it's like, you know, there's too many, like, rules.
Yeah.
You know, there was no rules during that thrash era. You got the guys were jumping off the side fills right into dudes.
Yeah.
And people
all those guys. What's that one guy? He passed away. There's a picture of him in that book, Murder in the Front Row. Anyways, there was Andy Airborne Anderson.
Yeah, Andy Anderson. Angry Andy. Yeah, he had that band Two Bit Thief later.
And another one. Didn't he have Jim Jones and the Kool-Aid Kid?
Yeah, he had another band. Yeah, that's right. He later owned a bar in San Fran.
Oh, he did?
Yeah.
Toby Rage. Yeah.
Just dudes, man.
These guys, I think, were the original, you know, stage divers.
How great is that book when you look at it?
pretty amazing.
It feels good, right? You look at that bookie.
It's part of history.
It really is.
You know, I'm forever in history. It feels great.
Yeah.
It's kind of neat.
It is neat, man. I mean, you know, to think about, like, just Slayer, you know, like, I love the artwork, too, of, like, Seasons and Christ Illusion. Uh-huh. That Christ Illusion artwork, I read that Kerry bought the painting from the guy.
Probably,
But, man, I wanted that painting. That shit is brutal. I wanted to paint my motorcycle, the Seasons cover, you know, with all the weird that shit. The guy was like, yeah, it'd be like $5,000. I was maybe not. But you guys had everything. You had a sound. You had the covers. You were on American, which was hot. And you were out just doing it your way, you know, just like metal.
Yeah.
When is it where you're like, I'm out of here? You know, when you split
in 92.
Yeah.
Yeah. We had done a bunch of touring. We were on the road, you know, pretty extensively. I mean, we had been touring a while, and, that was a time where I wanted to be at the birth of my first son, you know, and they apparently we were button heads.
Yeah.
I don't know why. I mean, it was stupid shit. And whatever reason. And I needed some time off. And, you know, they felt that it was more important to, you know, to continue touring.
Right.
Than to give their drummer some time, you know, to take care of his, you know, personal shit.
Right.
And then keep the band whole and move on. So, That was it. I said, you know, guys, I can't do this anymore.
Yeah.
Done. So packed my shit up and got a whole other band and did it all over again.
It's so crazy, right?
Yeah. You just don't stop. I mean, I don't. I have no reason to stop. You know, I love music and I love drumming. So just because it doesn't work out with one band, you know, it doesn't mean you're not going to continue.
It felt weird to me because you're such an iconic part of the band. And then I go see him, I believe, on the God Hates Us All. I saw that. Because after you left, I was like, I'm out. I'm like that. I'm all loyal to fuck those guys. Yeah. You know, well, so I get in there.
You're one of the...
I am
one of the... Well, you're one of the guys.
One of those guys because I really...
I'm like you. I appreciate the nucleus of the band. Like Bonham. When Bonham was part of Zeppelin.
That's right.
When his son took over, oh my God. Come on, really? I have respect for Jason and for what he's done, but when he put a double bass pedal on a single bass drum, that just blew it for me. It's like, really, dude, your dad was about single bass.
I respect Zeppelin more than anybody for never touring again.
Yeah.
And I mostly...
Well, because there's magic. That's the one thing.
It's never
going
to live up to what we're thinking of.
Never. There's a certain magic, just like with Slayer. Just like with AC/DC, with Bon Scott, there's a certain magic when you have those musicians and nobody could replace that.
Yeah.
Nobody.
Yep.
And that's it. You can't. Yeah. You know, Slayer's new drummer. Yeah. He's, you know, a lot of fans like him.
Yep.
But there's that magic. You can't replace that chemical.
It's that lightning in a bottle.
Pardon me?
It's like lightning in a bottle.
Yeah.
You know, you've captured it.
Chemistry.
It's chemistry. Absolutely.
It's like when you meet a girl and you two get along really well, and it's like a chemistry. It's something special. Same thing with the band. You get these four guys. They may hate each other, but on stage, there's magic.
Absolutely.
And that's absolutely what's missing, you know, I personally believe.
I do, too. I have a hard time. I think my whole life has been geared around, I mean, I've never made a lot of money, but my life has been geared around performing, being an artist and being in art. I love paintings. I love music. I love architecture, everything, you know, great films.
Yeah.
My life is around art. Would I like to make some money? Hell yeah. Do you sacrifice things for the money? That's when things start to go bad. I can't sit in their shoes. You know what I mean?
No, I
I understand it. But what I don't understand is, I don't understand when you're that long together, it's a team.
Yeah.
Here's it. Here it is. Four ways. We've made it 30 fucking years or whatever it is.
Exactly.
Let's just,
you know, it goes deeper than that.
It
you
does.
Know, there's, it's not just, you know, Carrie and it's not Tom, you know, it's who handles all the external business.
Yeah. Like Rick. Yeah. Right.
So that's, you know, I don't want to get into it too much, but
we don't need to get into it, but I wanted to touch on it because of course, if I don't, all my interviews are pretty extensive. People go, "Hey, you just blew right by that bullshit."
Yeah, I just wanted things to be fair for not just myself, but for the band, because I was noticing that the band was getting shafted.
Yeah.
You know, and it was bad. And I'm not into... You see, when I go on stage and I perform with all my heart. When I go up there, it's like I'm going to war.
Absolutely.
I
see it.
It's blood, sweat, and passion. There's no tears because obviously, you know,
but you're playing an instrument at 49 years old, some of the hardest music ever. You're playing and every night at any time your shoulder sockets could just wear out.
You never know.
Your wrist, you could have arthritis.
It's just when you do the math, it didn't make sense.
Right.
And you know, you don't need a fucking, you know, college degree to do some simple mathematics.
Right.
And, you know, when my attorney and I, you know, we did the math and we demanded the documents that were necessary to back up what my deal was about, that's red flags were popping up everywhere.
Yeah.
I mean, my statement in Facebook is clear.
Yeah.
And it's still there, you know, because if it wasn't true, I'd probably be sued for defamation of character.
Absolutely.
So, no, it's true and it's backed up by fact. And it's why it's still up there. So, you know, all that shit, you know, when it's all said and done, you know, I can't go on stage and know that my bandmates, as well as myself, aren't being compensated for the...
You know,
for the work that we're doing. And because we're out there. We're the ones out there.
You're looking
at traveling.
Yeah.
We're the ones sweating.
Away from your families.
Peeling off our clothes that are just fucking full of sweat. And it's like, really?
Yeah.
This is it?
Yeah. You know?
So it just didn't make sense. Especially when you see other bands that are as successful as we are.
Yeah.
And, you know, especially during the Big Four.
Yeah.
And, you know, to see how Slayer was traveling and how everyone else is traveling.
Isn't that crazy?
It's kind of weird. It's
yeah,
like,
right.
What's going on here? So I don't know. It's all good.
I get it.
They want to work with that organization, then so be it.
Yeah.
But, you know, hey, I'm a punk and I'll always be a punk and I'll never submit or not submit, but
you're not going to be a whipping boy.
No, absolutely.
Yeah. You're completely part of the sound of Slayer.
Yeah. And that's all there is to it. You know, I'm not going to be that. So, you know, that subject, you know, fuck it.
Yeah.
I just don't
How about Jeff? We'll just hop on this and then we'll move on.
Okay.
Jeff. So like it's weird to me. He got bit by a spider and you just don't really think about the how serious it is. You remember does he call you and say, "Hey, I got bit by a spider, I can't play?"
I had heard from their manager, you know, that you know, Jeff had to go to the hospital. Apparently he was bit by a spider. Actually, yeah, either was bit by a spider or contracted something,
right?
Something, you know, in his arm. The speculation is a spider bite, but they still don't know. He said he told his wife, you know, that he needed to go to the doctor. Something was wrong. He said, "I don't know, something's wrong with my arm." Well, he waited too long,
right?
And I guess when you first get bit and it starts spreading, you know, that's when you go to the doctor. Well, he waited and it was already eating up all his muscle
on
his arm.
What was it, a brown recluse?
That's what they say it was, yeah.
Wow.
His wife showed me, she sent me pictures. I since then deleted them, which I shouldn't have, but sent me a picture of his arm open from here all
They're just cutting the dead tissue away?
Yeah, cutting the dead tissue away. It was just split open. And you could tell some black. There's like some black shit in there. And they were just scraping it off. So he was sewed up. And he was already having difficulty, you know, playing because of his rheumatoid arthritis.
Yeah.
And I believe that you know, the spider bite or the wound inhibited his playing.
Right.
And so on top of the rheumatoid arthritis, you know, and now the spider bite, I think his playing was definitely being compensated, you know.
So even before the spider bite, he was having some hard times.
He was having some hard times, yeah.
Right.
It was a little sloppy.
It's got to be like that, right? Like some of the guys in your band, because you're playing music that starts to tear your body apart. Like Tom had the neck thing, right?
Yeah.
And then, I mean, it's amazing that you're still playing. Like, but I talked to you about this before when I met you a year ago. You said that you play in a fashion where you're not swinging your arms like a Tommy Lee or something, showboating. That's where you're going to lose all kinds of shit, you know, socket, rotator cup, and shit like that.
Yeah.
You're playing with your kit set up to where it's right there.
I call my drum set, you know, it's ergonomically set.
Right.
You know, where I don't have to reach far for anything, you know. They're big drums, you know, but everything is accessible, and nothing in is, in, you know, none of the cymbals are placed in a place. They're not placed where, you know, my arm feels uncomfortable to hit. Like I've seen drummers, oh, I put a cymbal.
Yeah,
right
the gong behind them.
It's like, really, idiot.
Yeah, you know, like, I do it right now and it hurts. Like I'm 48. Like,
do 90 shows and tell me how that's going to feel.
Especially with adrenaline in you. You're doing shit that you wouldn't even, like, we could do it right now, and you're not going to match the level of intensity that you do on stage. Adrenaline. Just like,
Adrenaline masks, you know, your pain. So you're not going to feel it at the time, but give yourself a few years and, you know, it's going to mess with you. So, you know, Jeff, you know, with rheumatoid arthritis, I don't think he took care of himself.
Yeah, right. You know? He drank a lot. Yeah.
And that, you know, your body is, what, 90-some percent water? And if you don't hydrate yourself or you're drinking alcohol, and that shit, you know, dehydrates you, you know, you're going to have some issues.
Do you think he got caught behind the persona of Heineken, you know, Hanneman, or did he have a dark issues of, like, did he have some serious dark things where he had to drink all the time, like an alcoholic kind of, you know, like if you see Chris Holmes back in the day, you know, where just, like, they've got some deep issues.
I don't think so. I don't think so. I think...
You think he just liked to party?
I think he just liked to party. And, of course, alcohol is an addictive drug, and he just got caught up in it.
Yeah.
You know, I don't think he did. I mean, him and I would laugh and joke on the bus, and he never told me about any deep, dark, you know, issues he had. He grew up middle class, you know, Long Beach, California.
Yeah.
It's not.
But he had to be a dark guy. Some of the songs, man. I mean,
he
the lyrics.
He just understood the dark notes.
Yeah.
He understood what sounded menacing.
Yeah. And his lyrics. Oh, boy.
Yeah.
Like, I mean.
He was creative.
He was very creative.
He was good. You know, maybe he did. I don't know. His own wife would probably know that.
Absolutely.
She would know. But he wouldn't share anything like that with me.
It was pretty insane. Like, boom, he was just gone. I mean, I remember.
I have text messages. The last text was like a month before he passed.
Wow.
You know, because I wanted to get together with him to discuss what was happening,
right,
you know, with Slayer.
Yeah.
He wasn't happy at all.
Yeah.
He texted me and said, "What the fuck is going on, Dave?"
Now, was he getting money while you guys are out?
Pardon me?
Was he getting money while you guys are out?
Yeah. Yeah, he was, but who's to tell how much?
Yeah, right.
You know, he didn't know a lot of things that were happening, you know, like the other guys didn't either.
Yeah.
You know? And it, you know, was a surprise to him, and I wanted to get together with him to discuss what was happening to me and to fill him in what I had discovered. And but we weren't able to get together, and there was a time where we were going to get together and chat, and he said, "Dave, I had a medical scare.
Wow.
I can't get together."
You know, wow.
We had a couple medical scares, whatever it was, and I think it was leading up to, you know, liver failure.
Yeah, man, that's crazy.
Yeah.
It's a heavy thing, man. It's like, you know, you just don't think a guy like our age is just going to be gone from booze, you know?
Yeah.
But when they are, it's just like, wow. Yeah. I mean, you know,
we saw it coming. I mean, the years leading up to the spider bite, you know, the drinking was getting heavy.
Yeah.
Very, very heavy. You know, including, I mean, Carrie as well. I mean, there was one show in Holland that, you know, he said his equilibrium or something with his hearing, but I think it was that tall glass of vodka that he poured himself before getting on a ferry in London, you know, and he splashed it with Coke. So here we have a large, you know, 32-ounce fucking...
A
full bottle of vodka with a splash of soda.
Oh,
you're
going to
wake
God.
Up the next day and you're going to tell me it was, my hearing, something with my hearing. I couldn't stand up straight. No, you were fucked up, man.
Come on, metal up, man. Instead of man up, metal up.
Metal up.
Speaking of that, there was a time you played with Metallica in 2000. What was that, 7 or 4?
9?
Yeah, something like that. Yeah, and you played Battery and Four Horsemen. Boy, was that like a dream for me to see. You know what I mean?
That was amazing.
Because I'm thinking, here's my favorite drummer and my favorite band, you know?
You know what was really good, or what was great, you know, at that moment or that day, was the rehearsal in their little...
Yeah, their little black hut. They always have that thing, like the curtain.
They're always rehearsing. Yeah. So I had to go in there and go over the songs with them, and it was awesome. I remember going into the heavy groove, dun 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 dun, dun, dun in Four Horsemen.
Oh yeah, Four Horsemen, yeah.
And I slipped into that groove, like it was so heavy and so on point. You know, Kurt, you know, stopped playing and said, "That's how it's supposed to be."
Oh,
he turned
man.
Over to James. That's how it's supposed
That's
to be.
That's the curse of playing with a Dave Lombardo. It doesn't matter who your guy is.
It was really smooth. You know, that transition was smooth. And but I love that. I love playing with those guys. I love them to this day. Great guys. Lars, he's great. It was great to experience.
Yeah, just playing Battery.
Yeah, just two songs. I wasn't familiar with their new music.
Yeah,
you
right.
know, I mean, the Black Album was great, you know, after I got to listen to it, you know, a few times.
Yeah.
You know.
I love the Black Album.
Yeah.
Sad but true.
It grew on me.
It's a different band.
It was, yeah.
But I
appreciate the change. I totally get it now.
Yep.
At the time, I really wasn't, you know, into it. I was in a whole other genre of music at that time, so I can't even judge, you know. But at that time, it just didn't hit me as a Metallica record.
Right.
You know, it was just so polished and the songs were so clean and
yeah,
it's just
into like Wherever I May Roam,
uh-huh.
Sad But True, you know, there's another one on there too that I really love. But those that record, of course, grows on you. And now when you look it back at it, you just go, oh, genius move.
Yeah, yeah, you of know? Course.
Well, or else they're just the Ramones for the rest of their life, which is cool too.
Exactly.
But I think in your mind, you got to be like, well, you know, we've done all this speed metal. Let's do something else, you know?
Right. You get to a point, like I get on stage with my former band, you know, where the riffs start sounding similar to other riffs.
Yeah.
So I'm playing Chemical Warfare, I think I'm in another fucking song, and I'm like, oh, fuck, I thought I was in...
That's fucking crazy, right?
That really fucks with me, you know? And then I'm trying to see where the guys are playing on the frets to distinguish what song. Oh man, that's happened to me a couple times, and that's a little frustrating. That's when you know for sure that your music is starting to sound the same.
Let's talk a little bit about Phantomos. I saw you guys at Coachella. You guys played Coachella
tent.
Uh-huh. I've got some great photos. I just fired them up.
I would love to see those.
Danny DeVito, and
Danny wasn't there.
Yeah, he was. And I'll show you the pictures. Mike Patton and him speak for a minute on the side of the stage. I was right there, and Danny DeVito goes, "You guys were incredible."
Yeah, I heard he's a big fan.
Oh yeah,
he's a big Phantomos fan.
He was there.
Especially of the Director's Cut album, which is classic album. It's brilliant.
Mike Patton, to me, is one of the coolest, talk about artists, you know, to the fullest. It doesn't matter what kind of fucking money is involved. If he's not into it, he's not going to do it. I don't know now, Faith No More, whatever. Yeah, go out, get some money, and then keep paying for the projects you want to do. Mm-hmm. You know, like if a Sean Penn does a major film, after that he's going to do like three indie films or whatever, you know. Neil Young, same way. Get money, rob Peter to pay for, you know, get your projects going. But he, that Angel Dust record, speaking of some Bay Area music.
Crack Hitler.
It's one of the best records to come out of the Bay Area. You know, when you put that thing on, it's just incredible. And his other band, I used to see Mr. Bungle, and the guy could sing, man. I saw him. He opened Mr. Bungle's show singing Welcome Back, Cotter in Spanish with a mask on. Yeah. Dos calo. You know, like, what the fuck? But Phantomas was radical, man. I mean, I saw you guys, and it was like almost cartoon music. What? How does the... How do you get together with them? And then when you're hearing the music, how do you not go like, what the fuck is this?
It was odd. When he first presented me with the music, or when he spoke to me about the music, I knew where he was. I knew where he wanted to go with this band and what he wanted to do musically. I just understood it. You know, the way he explained it was, okay, imagine opening up a comic book. And when you look at one little square, you know, you have dialogue and sometimes you have action, you know, like throwing a knife, swoosh, you know, or kapow, or
right.
Yeah. So he said, when you look at those comic books, picture the music kind of being interpreted the same way, where there's short snippets of music, but there's a lot of things going on, a lot of music going on.
Yeah.
And so when he sent me the tape, the cassette tape, I was blown away. First, that he wrote, obviously, the lyrics. There was no lyrics. The sounds, the vocal sounds, the bass, the guitar, the samples, the drums.
He did it all. Wow.
Now, that's a guy I would agree, you know, to, you know, he would take all the royalties or the publishing for the song.
Because he wrote it. I understand everything. That, man. Totally, he just showed up. Here's what you're playing. We're going to make this on tour.
You know, but when you're... Your half-ass guitar player shows up with one riff. Oh, I have this riff, you know, and here you are.
When you're in the creating nucleus, you have to split the money.
You have
to. I've seen it a million times. I've got three records out, or two records, you know, that are out. And there were guys in the room that, without them in there, of course, I was writing the stuff. But they were like, yeah, that sounds pretty good. They're keeping your brain going and stuff.
Mm-hmm.
And then the guy goes, maybe I'll just go halftime here. That sends me somewhere else.
Yeah, exactly.
You know what I mean? My mind goes somewhere else. Uh-huh. Now, you're engaged in the songwriting.
Exactly.
You know what I'm saying?
So you're helping the person, you know, come up with other parts. Hey, why don't I, you know, halftime this?
Now, if a guy walked out and had a cigarette while I'm working on shit, fuck him. I write him out. It's true. But if there's a dude that stayed in there till the end, and then we went and had a beer after, the guy was there from the ground up.
Yeah.
You know?
From the songwriting up, yeah.
So, I understand. But,
he came to me with everything and all the music written. And that blew me away. And that showed me right there the kind of talent I was dealing with.
Yeah.
So I immediately went to work and played that tape and transcribed everything. Got myself a little, you know, music book. And I just wrote my own notes.
Like a map.
It's just a little road map. It's, hey, I got this section. He was impressed. He was like, wow, you got this. It's done.
Yeah.
So I had my little book that I was reading off of.
And where were you guys rehearsing, in the Bay Area? Like, I heard he has like a warehouse or something somewhere.
Where did we rehearse? We rehearsed at Buzzo's rehearsal studio.
Oh, gotcha, his place.
In San Francisco for the first album. Then Buzz left SF and moved down here to LA, and now they have a place here where we rehearsed for the two or three records that we did following that one. But we rehearsed up there and recorded the first album up there.
Yeah. And when you're playing that shit, are you just like, this shit is wacky, man?
It's great.
Gotta be so fun, right?
Yeah, and he would have three or four different set lists.
Wow.
You know, that we would choose from. And it's like, what set list today? Oh, B.
Yeah.
Set list B. All right. Well, here we go.
You guys killed it, Coachella.
Oh, dude, that music is so insane. Mike and I have a musical connection. I don't know what it is, but his vocals are like my drums.
You know,
he really does some amazing work with that. And
you think you'll play with him again?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, we've been chatting.
He's great, man.
Yeah, yeah. We'll
I wish they had Jim Martin in the band, though, right? Jim Martin, see? No Jim Martin?
No Jim Martin. No, yeah, I don't think they get along. He does
not. Not at all.
He says that guy could, you know, keep growing pumpkins up there. I don't know.
Yeah, he was growing pumpkins in Santa Cruz. Yeah, like the biggest ones in the world.
Yeah.
But man, was that guy a god on that fucking
epic album.
Oh, man.
Yeah. That was amazing. That's a great album. Jeff loved that album. Hanneman really loved that album.
The Epic record?
The Epic record, yeah.
Well, it's so funny because Epic is the open, you know, the opening. But then, boy, Angel Dust, to me, it's like with Black Crowes. I love Black Crowes. A lot of people love that first record.
Yeah.
And then they lost interest. To me, all of a sudden, they become a great band, Southern Harmony. And then they release the masterpiece, Amorica. To me, Angel Dust is like no record ever to come out of the Bay Area. You put it on, you go, this is fucking great, man. It's like metal. It's like opera, saga, like funk.
Did Jim Martin play on that album?
Yeah, he did. He played that tour, too. I saw that
tour.
That
was the last one he did, right?
That was it. And then and then I just never listened to him again.
Yeah.
I couldn't tell you what they did ever after because...
Yeah, there's one album that's really good after that. The one with Collision.
The day, it was like...
Striptease.
I saw him once, I think, with the other guy.
Strip search. That's strip it. Search. Not striptease.
Now, you got your band Film.
Mm-hmm.
I got to tell you, I never listened to them. And then I go to see at the Rainbow anniversary party.
Oh.
And I was blown away. This fucking band's great. It had all these elements that I loved. It was kind of desert rock, Kaya-y.
Uh-huh.
It was kind of Amen-ish. It was kind of Slayer. It had all this flavor. It was punk.
Uh-huh.
And the bass player fucking blew my mind. Poncho. I remember two songs in, I was with Casey. I go, who the fuck is that guy? It's so rare to see a guy that just...
He's a real bass player, not just a bass player playing with a pick, two notes.
Unbelievable, this guy. And then Casey goes, oh, yeah, man, he plays in War. And I was like, that's hilarious that he plays in War because War is such a big
funk,
soul
yeah, low
funk
rider.
Band. Yeah, Low Rider, all that.
Can't
Cisco
We Be
Kid.
Friends, Spill the Wine.
Come on.
Cisco Kid.
I love
that's
that
fucking
shit.
Oakland shit.
That's
man.
Oakland, man. Tower Power, all the Tower Power horns,
well.
All that. God damn, that shit's great. Elvin Bishop, you know, all that weird Alameda, Oakland.
Yeah, you know.
But this guy blew my fucking mind, man. He didn't play on the first record.
Yes, he did.
Oh, he did?
Yeah, yeah.
But was he in the band at the beginning?
See, Jerry and I go back to 1995.
Yeah.
Like right when I was about to release the first Grip Incorporated album. You know, he came over to my house and
The guitar player.
He blew me away because, of course, I had come from the metal genre.
Right.
And here's this guy, comes over, the half stack. And a 1969 Les Paul gold top, all original, beautiful.
Sick.
You know, he comes off to me like kind of a Jimmy Page kind of guy.
Yeah, yeah. He looks like a kind of a 70s meth head biker rocker.
Right.
You know, so, you see, you go, look at this guy.
But he's totally opposite.
Like, I'm looking at the band, and I'm like, I'm in from the parking lot of the Rainbow Bar and Grill with the sun beating on us.
Right.
You're seeing people during the day you shouldn't see outside in the sun.
Yeah.
You know, cat house.
Is that what you look like?
Yeah, cat house vest guys. And it was awesome, man. Oh, I love the Rainbow.
Cat house vest?
Yeah, there was a guy wearing a cat house vest. I'll show you a picture of it.
Are you serious?
Yeah, it was awesome.
So Jerry, he comes in, he has his 69 Les Paul, and he starts playing. He plays some heavy stuff, but he plays some other bluesy. But he has a sound.
Right.
It sounds coming out of this guitar that just blew me away. There were these harmonics that I had heard that were coming out of his playing, and these chords that he would use were unlike anything I was used to. Of course, I came from metal, bar chords. But this guy would do all this different work, and I fell in love with his style. And, you know, he was great singing.
How'd you meet him? Like, I mean, he wasn't in any band, right?
He was in a band called Civil Defiance.
I don't know him.
They were signed to Atlantic Records at one time.
And like the 80s or the
90s?
Right.
You know, they were like one of these up-and-coming, you know, bands, and I don't know what had happened. But he really didn't get into any other bands. You know, he kind of stayed away from sharing his knowledge and his playing.
Well, how do you find him?
He was introduced by a mutual friend.
Like, hey, this guy's sick. You had a jam with him?
Yeah, he said, oh, you got to meet my friend. His name's Jerry. You check him out. And so we jammed, and I loved his playing. Then we started getting together on 95 through 2000. Then in 2000, I started getting busy with Testament, Phantomus, 99, 2000. I couldn't continue.
Right.
Then Jeff got sick.
Yep.
And I said to myself, wow, these guys are falling apart.
Yeah.
You know, I need to do something because I'm full of energy.
I feel
fucking great. You know, I live out here. I'm driven.
It's great, right? You know,
The sun's out.
There's girls.
Fuck yeah. It's beautiful out here. So, you know, I said, man, I got to get another band going because I don't know if these guys, if we're going to be able to play, if we're going to be able to tour, you know, what am I going to do with my time? Because I divide my time in 8-hour increments, 8 hours to sleep, 8 hours for myself, 8 hours to work.
Yeah.
You know, so, you know, I called Jerry and we couldn't find, you know, I said, yeah, let's get together. Let's jam. So I said, let's go to the Rainbow and just jam upstairs. It was like a Thursday night.
Yeah.
Open mic.
Really?
Blues jam. So we go up there and we just start jamming out some Led Zeppelin. And I said, hey, have you heard, have you heard from our original bass player? And he said, no, I can't find him anywhere.
Whoa.
MIA. He's gone.
What? Really?
Well, yeah, we couldn't find the original guy. So what ended up happening is, I had to put a search out for a bass player that would fit in this band. So I'm racking my brain. I couldn't figure out who the fuck I should choose. You know, I didn't want the typical bass player.
Yeah.
I needed somebody that was special, you know, somebody that could play, with his fingers, you know, instead
some of Cliff Burton style.
Some Cliff Burton style. And, so I was racking my brain. Then I had done this drum clinic at West LA Music.
I love that place.
Yeah. I don't know if it's still there.
I think so, yeah.
So I did a drum clinic there. This had to have been probably 2005, something like that. And this bass player came up to me. And this little guy comes up to me. Hey, man, my name's Pancho. I'm a big fan. He said, I play bass for War.
Wow.
I said, War? I said, you mean the funk band? I said, dude, I love War. I used to listen to that album, Why Can't We Be Friends, when I was a kid. My brother, my older brother that was into R&B and funk, he had Tina Turner.
Yeah.
Ike and Tina. Chaka Khan, War. You know, all these funk bands. And so I was familiar with that album. So fast forward, after the drum clinic, he introduced me, gives me his email address. I divorce, I move out to Hollywood, I call Jerry up, you know, and then I said, look, I have this guy in mind, and let me try to get a hold of him, and he's the bass player in War. Well, I showed him the video.
Yeah.
I showed Jerry a video of him playing Sunshine of Your Love. He was doing a solo, a crazy-ass bass solo at a War concert, and then he goes into Sunshine of Your Love. Dun, 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 dun,
yeah, yeah. Dun,
really heavy.
Yeah.
And I said, that's him. That's him. I said, Jerry, I got the guy. Check him out. He checked him out. I contacted West LA Music, and I said, guys, you need to get a hold of this bass player for me called Pancho Tomaselli from the band War. He said, oh, yeah, we could connect you with him. So next thing you know, he shows up. He said, okay, first question, do you eat pork? I said, fuck yeah. He goes, okay, let's go. Pork tacos.
That's a great question.
So we got along right there.
Yeah.
So we started discussing music. He said, dude, I'm on board. I love your playing. He said, let me tell you my story. He said, I get a phone call. I 2 days before your phone call, I bought my daughter one of those. He had a little newborn baby, one of those Slayer onesies.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
Slayer, you know, baby.
Incredible.
Clothes. And he had it on her.
Yeah.
On
her. And you called?
And I called, and he missed the call, and he listens to the message and says, hi, this is Dave Lombardo. You know, I'm interested in talking to you about getting a band together, blah, blah, blah. And he'd be like, oh, fuck. He has the baby. He can't put her down. He accidentally erases the message.
Oh, no.
Yeah, and he fucking panics.
Oh.
You know, so he contacts West LA Music.
Oh, God.
I think I mentioned
West LA Music.
I got your number from those guys. And he immediately calls him back and he gives me a call. But it was fucking hilarious story. And the way he you know, tells that story, it's just a crack up.
The
know?
Guy is incredible. Yeah, like, really, how old is he and how long has he been playing bass?
He's 10 years younger than I am, so he's 39.
Does he say who his influences were? Like, was he straight funk?
Jocko Pastor.
Yeah, of course, Jocko. Yeah.
Jocko, he's into Rocco Prestia, who he takes the place for in Tower of Power.
Right.
So he's playing in War and in Tower of Power.
Wow.
Right now. But he has all those funk influences, and he's got a
amazing talent.
Yeah.
What I liked about him was, I can't stand those guys of like, I play funk and they're like thump 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 thump, thump. Yeah. You know what I mean? It's like, get out of
he
here.
He doesn't do that, no.
This guy, he owned that instrument. Like
he owns
Burton.
The instrument like I own my drum.
That's what blew me away, because
that's
what I
look for in musicians.
Yeah.
You see, it's not just because, oh, you're famous or anything.
No.
No, you can be famous because you can suck balls.
Yeah. Totally. You could go to the baked potato and see dudes that you can't believe aren't famous that are blowing your mind. Yeah. Like, who the fuck is that guy? Yeah. You know, oh, he teaches at GIT for 30 years.
Yeah.
You know, whatever. But that day at the Rainbow, it was hilarious because I was on board right away.
Yeah.
It was funny. You're playing the Vista Lights out there.
Out there in the sun.
Out there in the sun, man. No tarp. Just fucking playing like this fusion. What do you call it? Like fusion metal? It's like, I don't even know. To me, it reminded me of like, if Caius, it was desert rock, but if they were on a little more acid than weed. You know,
it's the opposite for this band. We're on a little more weed than anything else.
Right, that's what I'm saying. But I'm just saying, it just felt a little like it was cool. It had all this different substance to it. Like it was, I couldn't nail it down to what it was.
No, it's original. It's how I like to roll. I like to roll with original products or original bands instead of rehashing the same old thing. You know, I get hit up all the time. Dude, you need to start another metal band.
That'd be so dumb. Yeah.
Why?
You were in the iconic metal band.
How can you get any better than that? Or why should I even start something like
that? Not only that, but it's always going to be, they're not Slayer.
Yeah,
it's like,
exactly.
Yeah,
it's like a loss. Fine.
Yeah.
I don't care. You can't please them all.
You got a new record coming out, right?
Yes.
September 16th?
Yeah.
Got it.
And a release date.
That's great.
Did you see the little trailer?
I did. It was fantastic. Fun. People watched the trailer. Yeah. It's on YouTube.
Yeah.
Somebody tweeted to me a couple days ago, hey, that's great, you're gonna have them on. I said, check out the band.
Yeah.
I'm fired up for it. Now, you produced both the records, right?
Yes.
And you record, where'd you guys record them? The new one?
We record guerrilla style.
Yeah.
Wherever they allow us to record for free.
Oh, I love that. Old school. I used to do that. I'd go to colleges late night.
Uh-huh. Yeah.
Like community colleges, they'd have a recording studio that they taught recording in, and one of the students could have the studio at night for a project, and we'd go in and we would just do
That's
drugs
it.
And booze in this college at night. Jared walked by like, what are those guys doing?
Yeah. Well, we were offered some time at this really, really nice house in Santa Monica Hills, close to Beverly Hills. And it was offered to us by Blue Microphones.
Yeah.
And they said, well, Dave, we have this studio. You could come out and use it for a day.
Wow.
So I recorded 12 songs in one day.
So great.
Old school. Right
old
there.
School. Zeppelin.
Just track it, you know?
That's awesome.
And we did it. And the album before that, we recorded it at my girlfriend's house.
That one's called Harmonic?
Harmonic, yeah. Right. It's a little rough. The sound's a little rough, but we did it because there was no record company that would offer us a deal to get us into a studio. So I said, fuck it. I'm going to do it myself.
Yeah.
You know, we're going to do it. That's it. And we did that record in a house. We recorded the drums in this tile room with wood ceiling and stucco walls, and it created a really cool sound for the drums, and the guitars were recorded in another room. What I loved is we succeeded. Part of success is, you know, in recording an album is completing it.
Oh, God,
and releasing it.
You know how many tapes I got over there that are just not out?
Yeah, you see? It's like, aw. You know, success isn't...
So much.
I mean, this is a Mike Patton quote. You know, he doesn't look at success being measured by, you know, how many albums you sell. Success is getting the album recorded, mastered, and released. Success.
Yeah.
That one's on the shelf.
That's it's like writing books or finishing an oil painting or building a chopper.
Yeah.
Whatever it is, man. If you got a chopper that's a basket case in there, it's just going to eat you alive. You know?
I've been working on that for the past 10 years. Why don't you finish it?
I know.
So we did that, and this album, we recorded the drums at that studio at House of Rock, and you know, and then we recorded the guitars at our own little rehearsal studio out in Van Nuys. All this was done, you know, practically for free.
That's great.
We did it ourselves.
Is it on label?
UDR.
Are you going to go tour or anything?
Yes, we're looking forward to touring. Hopefully we can catch a, you know, get ourselves a U.S. agent to book our shows, you know, and that's been the most difficult part. Record deals aren't the problem. It's the agents.
Yeah.
You know.
Yeah, because guys are like, well, there's no money in that for me, and they just don't do it.
Know. But there is. There's a lot of potential in this band, at least musicianship. I mean, if you're looking for a stage show, you might as well hire, you know, some kind of band with a gimmick.
Yeah.
But this is true rock played with passion, and it's real. It's like the music that we were watching, Frank Marino, Mahogany Rush,
God,
you know, Zeppelin.
It really is. I think it'd be great if you guys toured with Queens of the Stone Age.
I would love to record.
I mean,
with those
or
guys. They would really enjoy, I think, our music.
I think it'd be great. The fans would dig it. And as soon as I saw it, I was like, oh, this would be great on a Queens tour. Yeah. You know. And you're also playing with Amen now, Casey.
Okay, I love Casey.
Yeah,
great guy. He's really cool. Actually, I got to get a phone call to him. He called me yesterday, and I haven't called him back. He asked me to do an album with him, and I agreed. And you know, so we went into the studio, we rehearsed and banged out the songs at Ross's, which is amazing.
Ross
is an amazing producer.
I love him. He was on the show. He's like on the third episode of
this.
I've known him 20 years. He's a full Del Rey supporter, which I love about him. He gets it. He's one of the guys. I get it.
Yeah, yeah.
And I love the magic he pulls, and I love how organic he is.
Yep.
And he's straight up in it for the art.
Yeah.
And he's fucking, he'll tell you, fuck you, if something's cheesy or bad.
I've seen him do it.
Yep. You got to have that guy.
I've heard him on the phone telling artists, nope, they don't have it.
Yeah.
No, I don't care what you say. They don't have it.
Yeah. He's got great passion, man.
Yeah.
So you go over there.
So we go over there. We recorded the songs. I don't know how many they were, 10, 11 songs that we recorded. And he's still working on them. I don't know when it's going to be released. We were booked to do a couple shows in Europe, a few shows, but that fell through. The festival,
right,
I guess, canceled. You know, I'm not a member of Amen. I'm a hired.
You played on the record.
I played on the record, and I agreed to do on my free time several shows. But it's not. I'm not a member of Amen right now. I mean, my focus is film,
of course,
and you know I have other things going on, other projects that I do. You know, so that was a kind of.
People are looking for a story.
Yeah. Well, not only that, the press release was done in a way where it made it sound like that was my band.
That's
my new band. I just joined Amen.
Yeah, because he told me straight up when we were in the parking lot that you were just doing the record.
Yeah.
I was like, oh, God, I hope you guys play one L.A. show.
Yeah, I mean,
that's
sure,
all
we'll
I kept
play.
Thinking.
You know, I don't mind playing. I mean, we started rehearsing, and it felt really good. But unfortunately, you know, these shows fell through. So I don't know when we're going to do anything again.
I got a couple questions for you from Twitter, and then I'll cut you loose, man. I can't thank you enough for coming over.
Yeah, no
I'm
worries.
A huge fan. I've loved your playing all my life, and it's great to have a guy that's just a smasher at what he does, you know? Here's a guy right here, Alex Castino, and he asked a great question that I love, too. The Combat Tour.
Yes.
What was that like? Of course, it's one of my favorite DVDs. I have it on VHS.
Yeah.
I didn't know it was a tour. I just thought it was a tour.
It was a combat tour.
I just saw the one night, and it was Slayer, Exodus, and Venom. Who was the headliner? Venom?
Venom.
And was Exodus first?
Exodus was first, yes. Yeah, I don't think there was an opening act
right
before Exodus. It was Exodus, Slayer, and Venom.
Let's talk about that Studio 54
wow.
night.
Well, first of all, that whole tour,
yeah,
that was crazy. That was insane. Talk about mayhem, you know, drinking.
Bailoff.
You know, just Bailoff. And not only that, but Slayer, I mean, it was the crazy ones in the band, at least in Slayer, was Jeff, Tom, and I. I mean, we were the ones that would really get drunk. And there was one night we got drunk in Canada after a long-ass drive. It was Toronto, from Winnipeg to Toronto. It was miserable, cold. And one night we got there early, you know, to Toronto, and we went to the club that we were going to play. We didn't have a hotel. We slept in the van.
Yeah.
So we pulled up.
Actual van tour. Yeah, love it. Just tour. Metal.
U-Haul in a car.
Just same clothes.
Same. Yeah. Ugh. Crusty. And we pull up. We get all hammered, shit-faced. And this one night, this is the kind of person Jeff was.
Yeah.
He's very caring. And I passed out in the toilet. In the toilet stall. I was out. I passed out. And they couldn't find me. Where's Dave? Where the fuck is Dave? So they searched the entire club. They found me. You know, they said, oh, I think he's in here. And Jeff tries to rip the door to the stall. I'll get you, Dave. And he pulls. He's pulling the door. I'm pulling it, pulling really hard, but he's pulling out.
Yeah.
And he breaks the door and realizes, oh, he just had to push it in. And I was, you know, he picked me up and kind of like put me on his shoulder somehow and you know, dragged me. I think he had to take
me upstairs. Like a Vietnam casualty.
Bed, right?
Yeah.
And he told me the next day, he goes, you know what was the question you asked me? You know what question you asked me when I pulled you off the toilet? And I said, no, what was it? He said, you asked me, were my pants down?
Did you see my dick?
Yeah, were my pants down? And he said, no, it wasn't. But yeah, another story was when Tom got punched and got a black eye from Kronos. Did you hear about that?
No.
Dude, we were on Venom's tour bus,
uh-huh.
and it was Kronos, Jeff, Abaddon, myself, and probably a couple chicks in the back. We were like hanging out, listening to music, and Tom stumbles in. He said, "Where's the fucking bathroom in this thing?" You know, on the tour bus.
Yeah, yeah.
He had never been on a tour bus before.
Yeah.
He said, "Where the fuck is the bathroom?" And Kronos, just being, you know, Kronos, he said, right here in my mouth, you know.
Whoa.
Uh-oh.
Tom
pulls his dick out.
No.
Kisses on Kronos.
No.
Kronos gets up and punches him in the face.
No.
Gives him a black eye. And sure enough, you know, they spend the rest of the night, you know, I don't know, crying in the front of the bus. It's your fault. No, it's your fault. You said it. No, you told me.
Oh, my God.
And, you know, Tom had a black eye for the rest of the tour. That's it.
All right. One more question here. Let's see here. You still playing Tama?
No, I'm playing Ludwig now.
Oh, Ludwig. Oh, that's right. I saw the Vistalites. I wasn't sure if
yeah.
Are those yours?
Yes.
So dope. Do you play those because it's Bonzo?
Yes.
Yeah. Okay, yes. Give Bill Burr a shout out. He loves, Bill Burr's one of the best. He's one of the best comedians.
Really?
On the planet. Uh-huh. He loves Bonzo and he loves drums. And I tried to get him to come see it, but he had to go on the road.
Really?
But he's going to come see it and he loves drums.
Oh, cool.
And he owns the network that I'm on. So you shout him out.
Awesome.
Bill Burr.
Awesome.
Okay, let's see here. One last one. Oh, who drew the Slayer logo? Who came up with the logo?
I did.
Oh, you did?
Yeah. I designed that on the floor of Tom's living room when we were deciding on either logo or it was the name of the band. One of the two. It was either Wings of Fire or Slayer.
Oh, those were the two names?
The two names we were, you know.
And who came up with Slayer?
I think Jeff did.
Wow.
I think Jeff came up with the name Slayer. And then the logo, it's like, you know, and I was drawing some of the flyers in the early days. Some of the logos, the early logos I had drawn. And so Slayer, what's Slayer? Slayer's a killer. Slayer's an assassin. So what does somebody with a knife? Okay, so I get a pen. And
Anything, dude.
So you get a pen, and I had it like on a book, and I did this, and I said, well, if murder, if he stabs somebody, it's basically like that.
That's hilarious.
You know. So I made
a serial killer, like an angry serial killer.
So if somebody would stab you, it would be in these kinds of lines.
Yeah.
So that's basically what happened. It's pretty cool. You know, it was on a little pad, drawing pad on Tom's blue rug.
Wow.
He had a blue rug, and I remember that vividly, like it was the other day.
It's funny how you remember key things from your...
My long-term memory
It's great, right?
Great.
Yeah.
It's great. You know, even with all the, you know, weed and alcohol and bright lights and shit in my brain.
Thanks for coming down, man. Real quick, what's your favorite record? You got one favorite record?
All-time favorite record?
Yeah, do you got one? It's tough, I know. But, like, if you just grabbed one...
Well, what I have recently on my turntable is Dead Kennedys and God We Trust.
So great, right? I just saw a mint copy, like $50. It was original.
Have you seen the video footage of the recording?
No.
For that, look it up.
They got it on YouTube?
Oh, man.
I'm on that.
It's insane. These nerdy punk kids.
Yeah.
You know, Jell-O is...
Jell-O, man. Holiday in Cambodia is an incredible song.
Fresh fruit for rotting vegetables.
Oh, that cover, man, because that's the key time in San Fran, you know?
Yep.
And what a band, right?
Yeah, metal. God, I don't know if there's a metal album.
Just any album. I mean, like me, probably I just got the Zeppelin reissues, and Zep 3 is just, that's it for me. Yeah. I put it on, I go, this is it. It's all different flavors. So if I'm on a desert island, I'm going to get some blues, some acoustic.
Yeah.
I'm going to get some fucking, you know, rock.
Yep, I agree.
You know,
Zeppelin has to be my all time, you know, favorite songwriting, favorite, you know, drummer.
There's really nothing like that, right? How the fuck do you have four guys that good? One guy writing the riffs, producing the records. You know, another guy, master of bass and keyboards, a drummer that never has been seen again, and a singer that looked like a god and could sing incredible.
Yeah.
What the fuck? And then all different genres, you know, going to California. Yeah. What a masterpiece song.
I was just at Sunset Sound Studios on Sunset, and that's where they mixed Led Zeppelin 4 and Houses of the Holy.
Right.
And Zeppelin, the Doors recorded all their albums. Oh. When I went in there, I got the chills.
Yeah,
right. Wow. The Eruption, Doors. Van Halen, the first Van Halen album was recorded there.
Sick.
I was in the room where Eddie had, you know, recorded Eruption.
Yeah. That's a whole nother world I could talk to you about of, like, if you just get into Van Halen right up to the Fair Warning record.
Yeah.
I got all five now mint on vinyl. And you put those on and you think about Los Angeles and the Sunset Strip and those records.
Women and Children First.
Women and Children First,
album,
man.
All those.
That cover, Ibanez Explorer that he cuts with a fucking saw and puts bolts on it, and they're on the cover. Like, you know,
they were the ultimate party band.
Ultimate.
I agree.
I'm going to cut you loose. Thanks, man. Where
Dude,
can we find
thank
you?
Thank you.
God, I'm so glad
what
you came
that?
Over. Where can we find you? Twitter, right? Dave Lombardo?
The Dave Lombardo on Twitter. I'm on Facebook. Just look for the one with the most likes.
And you're pretty accessible.
Yeah.
I mean, I meet you like at an art gallery. We went to a photo show the first time I met you. You don't even remember.
Where?
Well, next to Toy Tie, and there was some photo show. And I went up and I said, hey, dude, you're the best drummer I've ever seen.
Steve Vai was there.
Yep. Christ Illusion was just
Niels
coming out.
Lozauer.
That's right.
Niels Lozauer was one of his.
I'm a rock photo addict.
Yeah.
I can't afford them, but if I could, this house would be covered in them.
Well, you have a Jimmy Page
picture.
Well,
I've got some good ones.
That's brilliant.
That is, there's nothing cooler than that. Because what you can see in the background is the two guys at the soundboard are wearing Led Zeppelin sweatsuits that Bill Graham made for the band. And they actually have that stage right here. I saw one on eBay go for $5,000.
No.
It's a green Adidas sweatsuit with the stage and embroidered here, and on the back it has the dates and shit.
Damn.
And you can see the two guys. One guy's wearing a trucker hat. They got those ice ski glasses on, the red, white, and blue. They're back there, man. This. It's insane.
Oh, yeah.
Look, they're both wearing sweatsuits, man. And then Jimmy in the dragon pants. Come on. How dope is that? All right, Dave. Thanks, man.
Dude, thank you.
Thank you. And the record's coming out September 16th.
Yes.
Film. And what's the record called?
Fire from the Evening Sun.
God, I love you, dude. Thank you. There he is, man. Thank you so much for coming. See you guys. God, that was great.